from the campus of Henry Ford College, you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. Good morning, one and all. It's 21 degrees here in the Detroit area. I don't know about you, but it's worth quadruple layering today. If there's any wind chill out today, it's a little cool, let's put it that way. Well, welcome to another Radio Vault. And we're going to keep it light and airy today. Light and cool. We're going to kick it off in a moment with the Jack Benny Show from 1944. This is a remote that he did from the Hollywood Canteen. And his guest, as we'll hear, is Eddie Cantor, who also had his own show at that time. We also have The Life of Riley, William Bendix, in a show that made it to television. We'll hear a show from also from 1944, coincidentally. We have another situation comedy called Meet Cordless Archer. A show from much later in 1950. Then we have a little bit of an unusual feature for today. Being that this is our first Radio Vault for 2025. We have got the Baby Snooks Show. Now, Fanny Brice played Baby Snooks. She passed away kind of in the midst of the launch of this show. But we'll hear a show before that, obviously. This isn't any ordinary show. This is a rehearsal. Now, they don't say any... They don't swear on this show. The show is from 1945. This is a rehearsal, like I said. Baby Snooks and the Beanstalk. Jack and the Beanstalk. For our final hour today, the Lux Radio Theater. And if you listen to this program for any length of time at all, you know that Lux Radio Theater, they took feature films of the era and turned them into radio shows, one-hour radio play. And we're going to hear Humphrey Bogart today and Walter Houston. In a movie adaptation, a radio version of The Treasure of Sierra Madre. That's for our third hour for today's Radio Vault. And any of you who have been paying attention know that Radio Vault comes your way every Tuesday from 10 in the morning till 1 o'clock, right? We feature the shows from generations of years gone by. So if you're ready, I'm ready to go back to February 27, 1944. Jack Benny, this is Radio Vault on WHFR 89.3 FM.
The Jack Benny program, transcribed from its earlier release for presentation at this more convenient hour. Gentlemen, tonight we're broadcasting from the world-famous Hollywood Canteen. Yes, the Hollywood Canteen, where hundreds of thousands of servicemen come to see stars like Dorothy L'Amour, Betty Grable, and Lana Turner.
That's right.
So, without further ado, we bring you a man dressed in a sarong, showing his legs, and wearing a sweater, Jack Benny!
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, I hate those corny introductions. You don't have to make up a lot of silly things just to be funny.
But, Jack, I didn't make anything up. For one thing, you are wearing a sweater.
So what? I'm cold. I've got just as much right to be cold as Lana Turner. Besides, when I take the trouble to knit something, I'm not going to throw it away. Anyway, I'm not trying to look like a glamour girl.
Oh, hello, Phil.
Hello, Don. Hiya, fellas. Gee, it's great to be here in the canteen.
Hey, hey.
I mean,
hiya, Phil.
Hello, Dorothy. Yes, sir, fellas. It's wonderful to be right here in the canteen
Phil,
tonight.
Phil, stop calling me Dorothy.
Oh, it's you, Jackson. I'm sorry. That sarong had me fooled.
Phil, this is not a sarong. I've been making sandwiches in the kitchen, and I'm wearing an apron.
An apron? Then how come you got it pinned up over one hip with a rose?
Where? Oh, well, I didn't put it there. When I came here, that rose was in my lapel.
Then what's it doing down on your hip?
It's a rambling rose, and shut up. Anyway, we're here to entertain the boys, so let's get started.
Yeah, and say, Jackson, you want to know what's happening tonight?
What?
Well, Alice is letting our baby daughter listen to the program for the first time. And, gee, I'd like to say a few words to her.
Well, go ahead, Phil.
Okay. Hello, my little bitsy tootsy bowl. This is your great big dowdy talking. And your great big dowdy is going to come home soon, and then a little lamsy wamsy can pull your little arms around him and give him a great, great big kiss.
Oh, that was cute, Phil.
Thanks, Jackson. Now I'd like to say something to the baby.
Phil, I thought you were talking to the baby.
Listen, Jackson, if I ever talked that way to my kid, she'd hide my cornbread.
Well, I wouldn't blame her. By the way, Phil, fine ad-lib line, hide that cornbread. Phil, how old is your kid now?
Oh, she's, let me see now. Well, she was born in February 1942, and this is February 1944, so, well, now, let's see. There's 1942,
mm-hmm.
And 1944.
Uh-huh.
You got a pencil, Jackson?
Yes, Phil, but this one won't do you any good. There's no eraser on it. Anyway, here.
But, Phil, the answer's very obvious. If your baby was born in February 1942, and it's now February 1944, she must be 2 years old.
How do you know it ain't your kid?
Wait a minute, Don, I'll make it easier for him. Look, Phil, how many candles did you put on your baby's birthday cake?
63.
Did you put 63 candles on your kid's cake?
Why not? I can afford it.
Oh, yes, Alice is working. But, Phil, I don't care whether you can... At least my ad-lib gets something, you know? Phil, I don't care whether you can afford it or not. Your kid was born in February 1942. This is 1944. She must be 2 years old.
All right, so she was born in 42. 42, 43, 44. She's 3 years old.
Phil, she's 2 years old.
I say she's three. I ought to know how old my own kid is.
Answer the phone, Don. Give me that pencil, Phil. I'll show you.
Hello? Yes. Yes, she's here. For you, Phil.
Okay.
Hello? What? Oh, are you sure? Okay, honey, goodbye. You're right, Jackson. The kid is 2 years old.
Who was that, Alice?
No, the kid.
Well, I'm glad she straightened you out. We come to the Hollywood Canteen to do a program, waste half of it by...
Hello, Jack. Well, how's the show going?
Oh, hello, Mary. Mary, I was trying to find you. Where were you? You're all out of breath. Your hair is mussed up. Look at your shoes. What happened?
I was jitterbugging with a soldier in the middle of Vine Street.
In the middle of Vine Street? Mary, if you're going to jitterbug with a soldier, you should do it right here at the canteen.
Where do you think we started?
Oh. Oh, you mean someone opened the door while you were dancing?
What door? We just went da-da-da-da-da, and we were out in the street.
Most of these boys here are in such a hurry. They like to dance with a girl and see the town at the same time.
Well, it wasn't so bad when there were just the two of us dancing down the street, but before I knew it, we picked up 12 more soldiers, 17 sailors, 9 Marines, and 2 civilians.
2 civilians?
Yeah, with that mob hanging on me, they thought I was the Sunset Bus.
Mary, you certainly are having a lot of fun today, aren't you?
Yeah. You know, Jack, I like to dance with servicemen, but the way they grip you, oh, brother.
Grip you?
Jack, they hold on to a girl tighter than you hang on to a dime.
Mary, I don't hang on to dimes.
You don't, huh? Every time you open your coin purse, a little sign comes out and says,
That's the name of the manufacturer, Smith. And son. Anyway, Mary, forget about me and think about the boys here at the canteen. You promised to help serve sandwiches.
Oh, you're right, Jack. I better go out in the kitchen and see how my maid Butterfly's doing. She's helping out, too, you know.
Okay, Mary. I'll see you later.
My heart tells me this is just a fling. Though you say our love means everything. Oh, Butterfly. Butterfly.
Yes, Miss Livingston.
Butterfly, how are you getting along with the food?
Oh, fine. But the radishes keep disagreeing with me.
I don't mean that. Tell me, how do you like working here at the Hollywood Canteen?
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, Miss Livingston, last week when I was working in the kitchen, Hedy Lamarr was there, too.
Hedy Lamarr? Well, that was nice.
Yes. And you want to know something? I think you're much prettier than she is.
Now, Butterfly, if you were working for Miss Lamarr, would you still say that I'm prettier than she is?
Oh, Miss Livingston, you see right through me, don't you?
Well, flattery is nice, but you shouldn't overdo it. By the way, wasn't your soldier boyfriend supposed to come here to the canteen today?
Yes, ma'am. But Jerome Coleman told me he couldn't get away from camp because they liked him there and gave him a special award.
A special award?
Yes. KP.
But, Butterfly, that's no special award. KP means kitchen police.
Oh, I thought it meant captain's pal.
Well, it doesn't. How could they possibly give an award for... Oh, there's the introduction for Dennis Day's song. Let's open the door so we can hear it.
Deep in Shadowland I drifted through the night that used to be. Ah, but now the veil is lifted and both of them are.
Sung by Dennis Day for the first time on the air. And Dennis, you sang that beautifully.
I don't think so.
You don't?
No, I sing and I sing, and the only one that swoons is me.
Well, kid, you certainly are frank.
I wish I was.
I don't mean him. Now, look, kid. After our show tonight, I want you to go home and pack because we're going up north to do some camp shows.
Up north?
Yep.
Oh, boy, are we going as far as San Diego?
Dennis, San Diego is south of here.
That was before the rain.
Oh, yes, that's right. I agree with everything. Well, anyway, Dennis, be sure to pack tonight. Because we're going to leave tomorrow, and our next broadcast will come from the Army Air Base at Lemoore.
Okay. Oh, say, Mr. Benny, do you mind if I take my mother with me?
Your mother? I don't even want her to come down to the station. Every time I get near that woman, we wind up in an argument.
Well, you don't know how to handle my mother. Why don't you do what my father did?
What did he do?
He killed himself.
Dennis, I met your father on Wilshire Boulevard this morning.
Doesn't he look awful?
Now stop with that silly talk and tell your mother to stay home.
Say, Jackson, when we go up to San Francisco, what am I going to do about the band? You know, they're working here in Hollywood.
Phil, just tell them to play a little louder and we're all set. You know, don't worry, we'll hear them.
Oh, Jackson, you're always complaining about my boys being too loud. They don't play loud at all.
They don't, eh?
No.
Phil, last summer you were playing here in Los Angeles while I was in Cairo, Egypt. And when one of your boys stood up and played his flute, three snakes stuck their heads out of a basket and spit at me. Play loud. And now, fellas...
Oh, say, Jack.
Yes, Don.
I meant to ask you, speaking of Cairo, are grape nuts and grape nuts flakes as popular in Egypt as they are here?
What did you say, Don?
I said, are grape nuts and grape nuts flakes as popular in Egypt as they are here?
Popular? Let me tell you a story, Don. Come closer. This may be interesting. Very interesting. I was crossing the Sahara Desert on a camel, and the sun, the merciless, unrelenting African sun, was beating down, scorching the desert sand. When out of this burning vastness, a figure came staggering toward me, weak from exhaustion and starvation. As I jumped down off my camel, this man, this stranger, this wanderer, crawled up to me, and sobbing hysterically, he cried,
"Food! Give me food! I'm starving, I tell you, starving! Save me! Oh, save me! I'm dying!"
I gazed at this pathetic figure. With pity in my heart. And then I reached into my knapsack and took out two boxes. One grape nuts, the other grape nuts flakes. His eyes lit up with anticipation. And again he screamed,
"Food! Food! At last I'm saved! Saved!"
So I said... "Here, my good man, which will you have, grape nuts or grape nuts flakes?" For the next 3 days, he couldn't decide. So in trying to help him reach a decision, I said, "Listen, my friend, grape nuts are a malty, rich, sweet as a nut cereal, with whole grain nourishment."
Yes, I know.
while Grape Nuts Flakes are a malty, rich, sweet as a nut cereal with whole grain nourishment. So he looked up at me and said,
I like them both, I tell you. Both. I don't know which to eat. Oh, save me. Help me decide.
So I said, take them both, my good man. They're not rationed. So he took them, Don, and he ate them both, Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes, not even noticing there wasn't any sugar and cream. And when he got through, he was so happy and so grateful to me for saving his life. He threw himself on the ground in front of me and said,
my, what big feet.
Jack, is that story you told me the truth? Did that actually happen?
Yes, Don, it happened exactly 4 times.
With the same man?
No, he was busy one night. We had to get another actor. Anyway, the story is the truth.
That's right, Don. I was there with Jack when it happened.
Well, hello, Larry.
Well, look who's here. Larry Adler. Larry, what are you doing at the Hollywood Canteen?
Oh, I drop around here quite frequently.
So do I. I generally bring my violin and play for the boys.
Well, one thing, Jack, you know your constitutional rights.
Larry, after a crack like that, you ought to do something to redeem yourself. How about playing a number on your harmonica for the boys? Begin the Beguine. What do you say, son? Beguine, played by Larry Adler, the world's greatest harmonica player.
Oh, now, Jack.
You know, Larry, I wish I could play an instrument that you could blow like a harmonica or a clarinet or something.
You shouldn't have tried it with your violin, Jack.
Now, what do you mean?
Well, I saw a picture of you and Larry in North Africa, and you had your violin in your mouth.
Yeah?
Mary, that picture was taken just as the boys were shoving it down his throat.
yes, I recall that.
Say, Jack.
Yes, yes, Don, with sugar and cream. Yes, yes. And now, fellas. Oh, say, Mary. He don't care as long as he's got sugar and cream on it. That's all. Fellas, Mary, how's the food coming along?
Well, Butterfly's finished making the sandwiches.
Gosh, I wonder if the lemonade is ready. Oh, Rochester. Rochester! He never hears me. Phil, give me a pair of dice, will you? Thanks.
Who's doing it, for how much, and what's the point?
Rochester! Rochester! He went right down on his face, folks. Rochester, where were you when I rattled those dice?
In Pomona.
Way out in Pomona?
Yes, boss. I'd have been here sooner, but I came in on my knees.
Well, get up off your knees. People will think you're Al Jolson.
Al Jolson? After it rains, I'm still Rochester. Who's he?
Get up. You're supposed to be in the kitchen mixing some punch.
Well, boss, as long as I'm here, I'd like to help entertain the boys. I rehearsed the song.
Well, that's a nice gesture, Rochester, but you can't sing.
Who can't sing? You just don't appreciate my soft, tender voice.
Soft? Soft, tender voice?
Yeah, in my part of town, they call me the sentimental fellow with the mellow bellow.
Oh, sure, sure.
Really, boss, I used to sing with the Hall Johnson Choir.
What happened?
Johnson threw me out in the hall.
And how do you expect to sing here?
I've been practicing. I got a trained voice. Listen. Chloe.
Wait a minute. You call that a trained voice?
Yes.
Sounds like it was trained with a whip and a chair. Anyway, Roch, I'm not going to argue with you any longer. Now, you can't sing here.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. This is the Hollywood Canteen. If he wants to sing, let him sing.
Oh, hello, Eddie.
Hello, Mr. Jack.
Go ahead, Rochester, and sing.
Now, wait a minute, Cantor. If he sings, I won't have time to play my violin.
Play your violin?
Yes, I don't mind doing comedy and jokes and everything, but to me, music brings out the real Benny.
Anybody who hasn't got an answer to that is stupid.
Mary, keep out of it. No kidding, Eddie. Don't you think that I have the poise of a great violinist?
Well, Jack, remember 2 weeks ago when I came to your birthday party and you played Love and Bloom?
Yes.
Let me tell you something, Jack. When you lifted your violin and placed it under your chin, that was true artistry.
Uh-huh.
And when you finished and took it from under your chin, well, Heifetz couldn't have done better.
Thanks, Eddie.
But, brother, that stuff in between must be a new secret weapon.
Oh, what do you know about music? You're just jealous because I've been in show business longer than you have.
How could you have been in show business longer than I have? I'm older than you.
You're older than me? Are you kidding? I'm older than you.
What are you talking about? I'm much older than you. I'm 39.
39?
Well, I'm...
Oh, are you as old as that, Eddie? Gee, I didn't know that, kid.
Well, I did exaggerate a little. I'm 37.
Even at that, I'll have to admit I'm a year younger.
Well,
answer the phone, Phil.
Okay. Hello? Yes? Okay, I'll tell him.
Who was that, Phil?
My baby. She wants you two kids to come over and play with her.
Well, what do you know?
Shall we bring our rattles?
Yeah, let's.
With your bones, you won't need any.
Oh, yes. Come on, Eddie. Let's go.
All right, let's go.
We sure had a lot of fun here at the canteen, and Larry Adler, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome, Jack. It was swell.
And Eddie, it was nice of you to drop over, too.
Say, Jack, do you mind if I say a word?
No, not at all. Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to listen to my program next Wednesday night when I have a most important announcement to make. Somewhere there is a man in uniform who will be $5,000 richer when he returns from the war. You, his mother, his father, sister, brother, wife, sweetheart, or friend can help him get that $5,000. For complete information, listen to my program over the same station next Wednesday night. Goodbye.
Well, this has been rather a musical program, wouldn't you say, Mary, with Dennis singing and Larry Adler's fine harmonica solo? It's too bad Jack didn't play his violin.
Well, to tell you the truth, Don, I know why Jack didn't play his violin tonight.
Well, why, Mary?
Well, he didn't take time this morning to eat a good breakfast.
Well, Mary, do you mean if Jack had eaten a good breakfast, he could have played his violin?
No, but at least he'd have the strength to hold it.
Well, I think you're right, Mary.
And fellas, we'll be with you next Sunday night, broadcasting from the Army Air Base at Lemoore near Fresno, California. And to the Hollywood Canteen, thanks for inviting us to broadcast here today. Good night, folks.
Original broadcast date on that one is February 27, 1944. We've got The Life of Riley coming up.
Hi, I'm Bill Mike Holloway, and if you're yearning and burning for some boogie rock, baby, that's what I got on the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show every Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. on WHFR.FM, the station that is always making waves.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Folks, you laughed with him when he played the Marine in the movie Wake Island, and soon you'll see him in 2 years before the mess. He's Hollywood's magnificent mug.
Okay, call me a mug. But remember, looks ain't everything. I may not have Walter Pigeon's face, but I've got Pigeon's toes.
The American Meat Institute presents William Bendix in The Life of Riley. On behalf of all those engaged in supplying meat to the nation, the American Meat Institute presents The Life of Riley. Human speech is what distinguishes man from the lower animals. It is also what gets men into trouble, especially when the man is Chester A. Riley, late of Brooklyn, now a war worker in California. And the trouble is brewing right now in the Riley kitchen.
Oh, Mother, please say I can go.
Well, Babs, I don't see any harm in it myself, but if your father says no, that's all there is to it.
Well, I'll tell you.
After all, I'm 16, and when a girl is 16, she isn't a child anymore. And if her very best friend's getting married and asks her to be bridesmaid at a military wedding, how does it look if a girl has to write back and say her father won't let her out of his sight a minute?
Well, I didn't say...
Now, Babs, you've done enough talking. Let's hear what your father has to say now.
Thank you. Well, what I say is...
Not that I agree with everything he says.
least we should listen.
Thank you extremely.
It isn't as if the wedding was way back... way back east in Chicago or someplace. It's just up in San Francisco, and that's right in the same state with us. And I'll only be gone a week, Mother.
Well, of course, Babs. It isn't what I think. It's what your father thinks.
If anybody knows what I think, they must be a mind reader.
Well, we're listening, Daddy. Go ahead and talk.
Well, I'll try, but I'm a little out of practice. Well, if you really want to know what I think...
Yes, dear?
I was waiting to get interrupted again.
We won't say another word, Daddy.
Well, I got a simple solution. Seeing as how Babs promised Frances she'd be her bridesmaid...
Yes?
And seeing as how Frances lives all the way up in San Francisco...
Yes, Daddy?
I think Frances ought to have her wedding down here where you can go to it without leaving home. How's that?
That's simple, all right.
Thank you.
Babs, I give up.
Daddy, Frances can't come down here. I've got to go up there or else miss seeing my best friend get married.
Oh, it's a shame. Military weddings so lovely. The groom's fellow officers with their swords held up for the couples to pass under. Babs all in pink walking on the arm of some handsome young admiral.
Well, I don't care. I just don't want to send my daughter to a big city all alone. You don't see Admiral Nimitz sending a little unprotected boat into dangerous waters without a convoy.
Oh, but, Dad, I won't be alone. Why, I'd be surrounded by dozens of sailors.
That ain't no convoy. That's a task force. No, I wouldn't mind if your mother went along.
But... Oh, well, they ask you to, Mother. Why don't you come with me?
I've told you, Babs, I can't leave your father alone.
You can, too. Go ahead, go with Babs, and let's have some peace and quiet around here.
Well, I like that. So you have to get me out of the house to get some peace and quiet.
I didn't say...
Oh, Mother, come on, go with me.
No, can't leave your father, even if he doesn't appreciate all I do.
I do, too, only I can take care of myself.
Why, you can't even remember where your clothes are. Can't find a handkerchief unless it's right under your nose.
That's where it's supposed to be. Now you're making me out helpless like a baby.
Well, yes. Since you asked me, dear, you're the most helpless man around the house I ever saw.
Oh, Mother, now you're making him mad and you'll never let me go.
I will, too. You can go.
Daddy, I can?
If your mother goes with you. And if she don't, you can't. So it's all up to your mother. If she's too stubborn to go, don't blame me.
Now I'm stubborn. Well, I like that.
Now, please, I don't want to hear no more about it. I've settled the whole thing good, and my conscience is clear. Now I'm going out and sit on the back stoop and blow out my brains with some fresh air.
Mr. Riley.
Who's that?
It's your neighbor, Waldo Benny.
Oh. How are you, Waldo?
Oh, my aching back.
What's it aching from now?
Housework. I despise it. Two women in the house make a lot of work for a man.
Well, you ought to make your wife and her aunt do some of the housework, Waldo.
Well, today I fooled them. I made their beds, but I sneaked out without making my wife's French poodle's bed.
Oh, you catch it, Waldo. Your wife will put you in a doghouse.
I wish she would. It's bigger than my room.
You should be like me, Waldo. I'm boss in my house.
Oh, Pop.
What do you want, Junior?
Pop, can I have a quarter for the movies?
No, Junior. No more quarters this week. You got to learn to live within my budget.
But, Pop...
I said no. Now, go play with your friends. I'm discussing something with Waldo here.
Oh, gee whiz. I never get anything around here.
You see, Waldo, just like I told you, nobody gets away with nothing. I'm boss in my house.
Yes, you're boss with your boy, but what about your wife?
Well, I'm even bossier with her.
Yeah, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, is your wife taking that trip with Babs?
Waldo, someday that key in our back door is going to puncture your eardrum.
Mr. Riley, I'll have you know I do not listen at doors. I heard you through the window.
Mr. Riley, take it from a man who knows. You've got to be firm with women.
Yeah? Why don't you get firm with your wife, Waldo?
Well, it's too late for me now. Once I let my wife make a decision.
What was that?
She decided we'd get married. She'd been deciding everything ever since.
I guess you're right. A man ought to decide all the decisions. Yeah.
Now, you take this question of Mrs. Riley going to San Francisco.
Well, I tell you, Waldo, I put my foot down there. I showed her who was boss. I said, you're going to either go or stay. Take your choice.
But you should have ordered her to go, positively.
Well, to tell you the truth, I kind of miss her a lot.
Yes, but it's good for married people to miss each other once in a while. You know what wrecks most marriages? Propinquity.
You're right. What does that mean?
A propinquity means seeing too much of each other. Married people need a vacation from each other. Now, when Mrs. Riley came back, she'd be happier to see you than ever.
You think I ought to order her, huh?
Well, you know the old saying. Far fields look greener, and absence makes the heart grow fonder.
You might be right, Waldo. I notice a couple of times lately when she kisses me hello, her eyes get a faraway look, like she's thinking of basting the pot roast.
Nip it in the bud, Mr. Riley.
That's what I'll do. I'll go in there and say, Peg, you absolutely got to go to San Francisco with Babs, because the only way that married people can live together and be happy is to separate and be miserable.
Oh, but Mother, Daddy and Junior would be all right here, and it would be such fun.
Peg. Listen, Peg, my head's made up.
Well, that's fine, Riley. Now, as soon as I make up my mind, we can decide.
It's all decided. You're going.
Oh, am I?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a good mind to go and teach you a lesson. Bet you'd miss me after a day or two.
Well, sure, but it'd be good to miss you for a change.
What?
Well, I mean, it's a good thing for married people to miss each other.
Well...
Yeah, well, when people see too much of people, perpinquity sets in. But absence makes the grass grow greener.
Why, I almost think you want to get rid of me.
Now, don't be twisting around what I say, Peg.
Well, if you do, I'll make it easy for you.
Oh, Mother, I don't think Daddy means anything...
Babs, don't be telling me what I mean. If I don't know what I mean, how can you tell? All I say is I'm ordering you to go, both of you, and that's final.
Oh, my goodness, Babs, close the window. That Waldo Billy's wife's got ears like a scoop shovel.
Yes, Mother.
There. Now then, Chester Riley, what's all this about ordering me to go away?
Oh, Peg, you know what I mean. It's just that Babs wants to be at this wedding, and, well, I'll miss you, Peg, but I don't think she ought to go alone.
Sure you'll miss me?
Sure, Dumplin', but I'll get by somehow.
All right, dear. I'll do it.
Right.
Oh, thank you, Mother. Thanks, Daddy.
But listen, Peg, be sure to come home as soon as that wedding's over so we can go on with ours.
Miss Furbish, I heard it with my own ears. Sure as my name's Letitia Binney, Riley practically threw her out of the house. I'm ordering you to get out, he says. That was last night, and now she's going. Uh-huh, I can see her. She's walking down the street with two heavy suitcases. Yeah, probably taking the silver with her. The daughter's going with the mother. What? Why, of course. The mother always gets custody of the girl.
Hello, Mrs. Durkin. This is Sandralina Furbish. Did you hear about the Rileys? Well, my dear, it's come at last. Yes, a knockdown drag-out fight. So what does she do but up and leave him? Oh, yes, bag and baggage. Why, she's going to Reno, of course. Yes, isn't it a shame? But I always said it couldn't last. They were a little too lovey-dovey to be true.
Hello, Riley the Hermit speaking. Oh, Muley Durkin, hiya. What? Oh, sure, I feel okay. Yeah, I'm all alone, what of it? No, why would Peg leave me a goodbye note? I knew she was going. Certainly, I made her go. I got sick of arguing. What? No, I ain't lonely. I'm having a great time. Yeah, yeah, you never know how many friends you got till your wife leaves you. Thanks, Muley, so long. Ah, what friends I got fussing over me like that. You'd think Peg was gone for good the way they talk.
In a moment, we'll rejoin Riley, who is completely unaware of the rumor that he himself has helped spread. And now back to The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Peg and Babs Riley have gone away for a week to see a girlfriend of Babs married. And a gossipy neighbor has started a false report that Riley and his wife are separating. Riley has no idea of what is being said, so he isn't doing a thing to curb the rumor that keeps on rolling along. It's about to receive further impetus as Miss Sandralina Furbish, the neighborhood's prowling spinster, meets Riley's son, Junior.
Oh, Junior! Junior Riley!
Oh, hello, Miss Furbish. Oh,
Junior, you poor dear boy. Is it true? Is it really true? Is your mother gone?
Oh, yeah, it's true. She left this morning.
Oh, she did, huh? And all happened so suddenly, too.
No, it wasn't sudden. Mom and Pop been arguing about it for days.
Really? Oh, you poor motherless boy, wandering around the streets all day. Is your daddy home alone?
Oh, yeah. I'm just going home to keep him company.
I have a better idea. Here's 25 cents. You go to the movies.
Well, gee, thanks, Miss Furbish, but Pop...
Don't you worry about your dear father. He won't be lonesome. I'll drop around and cheer him up. Oh, it takes a woman to make a man forget another woman. Mr. Riley.
Oh, hello.
Remember little me? Mr. Riley? Mrs. Muley Durkin introduced us at the block party last year when they opened the new sewer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's where we met, at the sewer. I didn't quite catch your name, Mr. Mrs.
Miss Sandralina Furbish. But I'd be willing to make a change. Mr. Riley, Junior told me about your wife leaving, and I just went right home and baked you these cookies. 6 dozen.
Oh, well, thanks. Gee, everybody's bringing me food.
My, what a lovely kitchen. Oh, what I could do with a kitchen like this.
You could, huh?
Good, if I had the right man to eat my cooking. Now you sit right down at the table and I'll fix you a tasty little bite. You know what they say. The way to get to a man's heart is through his stomach.
Yeah, but is this trip really necessary?
Oh, you poor unhappy man. I know what you must be going through, living here all alone.
Oh, I ain't exactly all alone. There's about 200,000 ants in the house.
Oh, now, Mr. Riley, don't pretend to me. You're only trying to be gay, but we must think of your son, Junior. Poor motherless boy.
Oh, I just love boys. Any age.
Look, Miss Furbish, there's something puzzling my head.
Oh, your poor head. Why don't you let Sandy smooth away all the ache and care from your brow? Mr. Riley, my close friends call me Sandy.
I remember that, Miss Furbish.
Oh, I do believe you're shy, Mr. Riley. Well? Oh, well, you'll get over that. Now relax, you poor boy. Where's your evening paper to read?
I read it.
And where's your pipe? I love a pipe.
Well, you can have my pipe, but I ain't got no tobacco for you.
And your slippers. I love to see a man in slippers. Now, you sit still. I'll get them for you. Oh, I was just born to wait on some man. Poor little me.
Oh, wait, Miss Furbish. Miss Furbish, come back.
Oh, here I am. Did you miss me?
Yeah. No. I mean, look, I don't need my slippers, and thanks for the cookies and everything, Miss Furbish. Good night now.
Well, are you sure you'll be all right, Mr. Riley, all alone?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to turn in.
Well, good night then, but I'll be back tomorrow to get your breakfast.
I always eat breakfast out, starting tomorrow.
Oh, good night, sweet prince.
Good night.
Oh, it's hard to say goodbye, isn't it?
Practically impossible. It as soon as you take your foot out of the door.
Oh, pardon me.
Yes.
Well, good night.
Good night.
And don't you worry. I'm going to look after you. I'll just creep in and out every day like a little mouse.
A little mouse. For the first time in my life, I wish I was a cat.
Mr. Riley?
That's me.
I know. That's why I said, Mr. Riley. I have news for you, Mr. Riley. Your wife has left town.
I know that. How do you know?
Well, I keep my ear to the ground. I pick up a lot of dirt that way.
Say, who are you anyway?
Oh, pardon me. I forgot we've never met. Are your hands clean?
Yes.
Then here's my card. I'm J. Gordon Chase, attorney at law.
Chase, 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 and Brecker. How did that Brecker get in there?
He prints the cards.
Look, Mr. Chase, I'm very busy, so tell me what you want.
Let's be brutally frank, Mr. Riley. In 99 cases out of 100, what is the main reason for divorce?
Well, marriage.
No, but you're warm. The main reason for divorce is desertion.
Well, listen, what's that got to do with me?
Well, your wife has gone to San Francisco bag and baggage. An open and shut case of desertion.
You're crazy. My wife ain't deserting me. She's coming back.
Nonsense. She couldn't even if she wanted to. How'd she ever get a train reservation?
Get out of here, I tell you. She's coming back.
Very well. If she double-crosses us and returns, we'll play ball with her. We'll offer a half your salary, the furniture, drapes, and complete custody of your mother-in-law.
Listen, are you out of your mind? I don't want no divorce, no...
You don't?
No.
Well, frankly, Mr. Riley, this comes as a bit of a blow. Our entire organization is planning on it.
Why should I get divorced? I'm very happy.
Well, if you don't want a divorce, how about letting me sue all your friends for spreading a rumor that you are getting a divorce?
Get out of here. And here's your card.
Keep it, sir. Maybe you'll have an accident soon.
Get out, or the next ambulance you chase, you'll be riding in it. Oh, is that you, Junior?
Yeah, Pop.
Huh. By the time you came home, I'd been lonesome. Say, what are you looking so down in the mouth about?
I feel down in the mouth.
Oh, I guess you're lonesome too, huh, Sonny? Well, let me tell you about a lawyer that was here a little while ago. It'll hand you a big laugh. This lawyer...
I don't feel like laughing.
Hey, where you been, Junior?
The movies.
Well, I guess you saw one of them horror pictures. Well, listen, this lawyer had the nerve...
It wasn't a horror picture. It was the kind of picture that makes a fella think.
Yeah? What was the name of the picture?
Children of Divorce.
You should stay away from silly pictures like that. Plenty of time to see them after you're married.
Pop, did you say a lawyer was here?
Yeah, and guess what he wanted?
To divorce you and Mom.
Yeah, ain't that a killer?
Then it's true.
What's true?
With everybody saying that you and Mom are splitting up.
Who says we're splitting up?
The whole neighborhood says so. On my way home from the movies, at least 6 people stopped me and said they were sorry.
Well, don't you believe them. I'd like to get my hands on the scandal mongrel who started this.
You should have told me, Pop. In this picture I saw, the children were the last to know.
Listen, will you stop this crazy talk, Junior? Your mother and me ain't splitting up.
But didn't Mom take Babs and go away?
Well, sure, but only permanently for the weekend. You know that.
Pop, we're in this together. Let's talk it over, man to man.
There's nothing to talk over, your mother and me.
Pop, don't be stubborn. Take Mom back, please, Pop. Don't split up our home. Or something terrible happened just like it did to the man in the picture. You'll stop shaving and look like a bum.
I'll never look like that. I'll go shave right now, Junior.
And what about me? I'll become a juvenile delinquent.
You're too young to be a juvenile delinquent. Now, get all these crazy ideas out of your head. You go to the wrong movies. You should go and see sensible pictures like Mr. Skeffington or Mrs. Parking Lot. Junior, an earthquake couldn't split me and your mother, so get that through my thick skull.
Oh, but, Pop, why did you send for a divorce lawyer?
I didn't send for him.
Well, if you didn't call him... must have sent him.
But why should she send him? She's only gone for the weekend to San Francisco. She... Wait a minute. How do I know she's only gone for the weekend? If she's only gone for the weekend, why did she take her spring coat? It ain't warm enough in San Francisco for a spring coat. How do I know she went to San Francisco? Maybe she didn't. Maybe she went someplace where you can use a spring coat. In Nevada, you can use a spring coat. That's where she went. To Nevada. To Reno, Nevada. My own wife. After 18 years of marriage, goes to Reno without taking me. How could she do a thing like this? Divorcing her own husband. Hello?
Hello, Riley. This is Peg.
Listen, Peg, I ain't giving you a divorce, and that's final.
What are you talking about?
Listen, Peg, before you say anything, I want to say what I got to say. I mean, I didn't mean what I said before you went about you going, because now I don't want you to go until you come back and talk it over.
What's all this?
Hey, Dumpling, give me another chance. Just come back where I can talk face to face instead of person to person.
Come back? Why, I am back.
I know I could be a better husband if you'd only... You're what?
I'm down at the station. I came back sooner from San Francisco than I thought.
Peg. Peg, you're coming back to me?
Of course.
And you're not mad or anything?
Why, no, Riley. What's got into you?
Well, hurry home and I'll tell you.
I'll be right home, dear. Here's a kiss till I get there. Bye.
Wait, Peg. Hello, Peg. Peg.
Sir, you're no longer connected with your party.
That's what you think, sister. Junior, she's coming back. We're still married. We won't have to divide you. Oh, what a wonderful evening. Oh, what a mess this house is in. I gotta get it fixed up for Peg. She's coming home. Oh, what a wonderful feeling. My wife says she's coming home. Cobwebs all over the ceiling. I gotta find me a broom.
We'll be back in just a moment.
WHFR Dearborn.
So they had the wedding a day sooner, Dad.
So we got through and hurried back.
Oh, it's great to have you back, Dumplin.
Oh, say, we thought you were never coming back.
Oh, Riley, how could you believe a thing like that?
Well, sometimes I'm dumber than I look. It's possible. But anyway, there's one thing I know. From now on, we ain't never going to be separated. I ain't letting you out of my sight for 1 second. Well, goodbye, Dumplin.
O'Reilly, where are you going?
Well, after all, tonight's my bowling night. Good night.
Of Riley, starring William Bendix, sponsored by the American Meat Institute, will be back next week at this same time. William Bendix appears on this program by arrangement with Hal Roach. The Life of Riley was directed by Don Bernard, with music by Lou Kozloff, and came to you from Hollywood. This is Ken Niles saying, see you next week.
And this is WHFR Dearborn, not the Los Angeles station. That was a recording that was from a delayed broadcast transcription from November of 1944. Life of Riley. And what are we going to do next here? On tap, we have Meet Cordless Archer, another sitcom. In the meantime, let's find out what's going on later on tonight.
The many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here, WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. You have the power to protect your car. Remove your valuables, roll up your windows completely, and always lock your doors and take your keys or fob. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
It's a
typical summer day at the Archer household. The Archers, Mr. and Mrs., and their daughter Corliss, are having breakfast. Mr. Archer is trying to read the morning mail, and Corliss, as usual, is prattling away about a very serious problem.
And that isn't the worst part of it, Mom. We not only have to write a composition before school starts, but we have to make it about something exciting that happened this summer.
Well, dear, I'm sure you'll think of something. What are you reading, Harry?
Oh, a letter from my old roommate at law school, Ned Brown. You remember him?
Yes, very well. How is he?
He's fine. He's writing to thank me for a favor I did for him last month, and he wants to know if he can return it.
He's practicing in Washington, isn't he?
Yes, doing very well, too.
Oh, that's nice. Harry, I don't like to rush you, but it's getting rather late.
Oh, that's all right. I'm not going to the office this morning. I'm trying a case, and I'm going directly to court. Don't have to be there till 9:30.
Oh, golly, Daddy, what kind of a case? Is it a murder, a divorce, or what?
No, of course. It's a case of a client of mine trying to collect some money that's legally due him.
Oh, who's the client, Harry?
A fellow named Johnson, new client. He's suing a man who owes him back rent.
Why doesn't he pay his rent?
Says he has no money.
Then what's the use of suing him?
I should have left when I was even. Simply this, Corliss. I'll get a judgment against this man. Then, if and when he does have some money, he's ordered by the court to pay it.
What happens if he doesn't?
In that case, he's held in contempt of court. And we have laws for people who hold our courts in contempt.
Oh, Daddy, this is fascinating. Go on.
Well, that's all there is. Simple, what?
Well, it's very simple once you get the hang of it. I never realized... That sounds like Dexter.
It sounds like a sick hippopotamus, but it's...
Tell him to come in, dear. Some of the neighbors may still be sleeping.
Not now they aren't.
Come on in, Dexter. We're in the breakfast room.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Archer. Hello, Mr. Archer.
Hi, Dad.
Hello, Dexter.
Dexter?
Yeah, Mr. Archer?
Just outside our front door, there is a little button. That button is connected to a switch, which in turn is connected to a copper wire. When pressed, the little button rings a little bell in our kitchen.
Gee whiz, you mean you got a new doorbell?
No, Dexter, it's the same doorbell we've had since the house was built 20 years ago. And that bell's been ringing ever since.
Gee, doesn't it get on your nerves?
Well, I have to be going. I know you'll excuse me, Dexter.
Oh, sure, Mr. Archie. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. Bye, Corliss.
Bye, Angel. Good luck on your lawsuit.
So long, Mr. Archer.
So long, Dexter, but I'm afraid not for too long.
I'll go to the door with you, Harry. Corliss, you and Dexter can do the breakfast dishes if you like.
Holy cow, I knew I shouldn't have come over here so early. Yeah?
Have you absolutely made up your mind about being a doctor?
Sure. Why?
Well, nothing. Only, well, I think being married to a doctor would be wonderful. Don't misunderstand me. I mean, having babies for nothing and stuff like that.
What do you mean, having babies for nothing? Doctors get good money for having babies. I mean, bringing babies. I mean...
Yes, Dexter, dear, I know what you mean. Only, I was just thinking, well, have you ever thought of being a lawyer?
Oh, sure, lots of times. But I'd rather be a doctor.
I think law is just fascinating.
So is medicine. What's wrong with being a doctor?
Nothing. It's just that my daddy doesn't think you'll ever be a doctor.
Huh? Well, why not?
Well, he thinks you're too clumsy to be a surgeon and too noisy to be a physician.
He does, huh? Your father's always saying things about me. Like, one time he said I didn't have a brain as big as a peanut. And I know I have.
Oh, Dexter, stop being a baby. Listen, Daddy's trying a very important case today, and I was just thinking I'd like to see it.
Why?
Well, I may be able to get some material for my composition. You know, the one we've got to write this summer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what kind of material?
Well, it's a very interesting case about a very interesting man who has no money. Let's go down to the courthouse and watch him. This poor, miserable soul may be the subject I'm looking for my English composition.
Okay, that's a swell idea. Maybe I can get something from watching him, too. Uh-oh.
Dexter Franklin, look what you've done. You've broken a saucer. Now Mother will be stuck with an odd cup.
Oops. Not now she won't. I just broke the cup.
You clumsy idiot. do get married, and if you ever do become a doctor, and if we ever do have any children, somebody else will bring them into the world. I'm glad we're finally out of that courtroom. If anyone had ever told me that my father was a hard-hearted, mean, cruel old skinflint, I never would have believed it.
What are you talking about? All lawyers act like that in court. They have to.
I don't believe it. Anyone with half an eye could tell Mr. What's his name?
You mean the fellow your father's suing? Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Jenkins. Anyone could see he was telling the truth.
Your father couldn't.
I know, and that's what makes me so mad.
I don't think your father will want you to come to court again. He looked pretty sore at the way you acted.
Well, I can't help it. I only did what any truth-respecting person would have done.
You mean when you yelled out, "I object"?
Yes. And I certainly did object.
Well, maybe so. But I don't think spectators are supposed to object out loud.
I don't see why not.
Well, anyway, the judge didn't think so. Because if you remember, that's why we were kicked out of court.
Well, anyway, I guess I showed that judge.
Yeah. Oh, gee, I sure was proud of you, Corliss. With your head held high and that determined look on your face, you were the picture of dignity as the sheriff dragged you out the door.
I don't care. I think the judge had no right to have me thrown out just because I objected.
Well, all your father asked him was if he could pay the back rent.
But that's so silly. Daddy knows he can't pay the back rent. He told me so this morning.
And why did he ask him?
That's why I'm so mad. I think Daddy was just deliberately trying to rub it in or something. Did you hear him say he had 6 children?
Who, your father?
No, Dopey, Mr. Jenkins. And he hasn't worked in ages. If Daddy wasn't so mean, he'd be helping him instead of suing him.
Now, Coralie, you're fine.
Dexter, wait, I just had a terrific idea.
Uh-oh. What?
If Daddy won't help those people, I will.
Huh? How can you help them?
Well, I can, and you can, too. Now, listen, here's what we'll do.
It was the darndest thing. It was so funny, I can't even get mad about it.
Well, what happened?
Well, while I was questioning the defendant, Mr. Jenkins, Corliss apparently didn't like my line of questioning, so she yelled right out in a loud voice, "I object!"
Oh, no. Well, then what happened?
Judge McCarthy threw her out of court.
Oh, good heavens. Did the judge know who she was?
No, I took great pains to let him think she was a complete stranger.
Well, I wonder where she is. It's almost dinner time.
Probably thinking up a good explanation for her actions in court.
I think I'll start dinner anyway. She ought to be home soon.
Swell.
I've got your favorite dish, a big juicy sirloin steak.
Oh, boy, let's get at it. I'm starved.
I'll put it on the fire right away. Come on out to the kitchen and talk to me.
Okay. I wish you could have seen the look on Judge McCarthy's face when he heard Corliss pipe up right out of the fifth row.
That's funny.
What is?
Can't find the steak. I left it right in the refrigerator. No, it's not there.
You sure you didn't leave it at the butcher's?
Of course I'm sure. Why should I leave it at the butcher's?
I don't know, dear, but women are so absent-minded sometimes.
Harry, Archer, don't try to be funny. I brought that steak home in my own hands and put it in the icebox.
Well, then it should be there now.
Yes, it should. Let's see now. I went from the butcher's to the grocer's and then to the Franklin's for a minute.
Don't tell me you left that steak at the Franklin's. I couldn't bear the thought of Dexter sticking his teeth into it.
Of course I didn't leave it at the Franklin's. I told you I put it in the icebox.
I know. Well, let's get dressed and go out to dinner, shall we?
Oh, but Harry, that's ridiculous. I know I put
Yes, dear, but I want to go out anyway. We haven't been out to dinner in ages. It'll do us good.
Well, all right, but I wish I knew.
Now, Janet, forget it. Come on, I'll take a quick shower, and by that time, Corliss ought to be home, and we can go to Marcel's.
Marcel?
Sure, why not? Let's shoot the works.
Oh, okay, Harry, if you say so. Now, I wonder where that steak could be.
Janet?
Shall I wear my green dress or my blue one?
Wear the red one.
Oh, dear. Men are no help at all like time like this.
Hello, Mom. Well, why are you getting all dressed up?
Corliss, very nice of
you been?
Out with Dexter. Where are you going?
We're going out, dear. You too. Change your dress right away.
Janet, who are you talking to? Oh, hello, Corliss. I didn't hear you come in.
Hello, Daddy.
I should hold you in contempt of court after what you did today.
I know, Daddy, and I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. Just don't come into any of my cases anymore, and you're forgiven.
Well, it was just that I was so sorry for that poor man.
I know, and you just couldn't keep your feelings to yourself.
No, Daddy, I couldn't. Where are we going?
We're going to Marcel's for dinner, to celebrate.
Well, what are we celebrating?
Oh, I don't know. Just the fact that your mother mislaid the steak she bought for dinner.
Now, Harry, I didn't...
Oh, golly.
What do you mean, oh, golly?
Hmm? Oh, nothing. Just, oh, golly.
Well, hurry up and get dressed, baby.
All right, Daddy.
Janet.
Well, Harry, what is it?
My suit, my new suit. Where is it?
I didn't even know you had a new suit.
Oh, that's right. I was saving it for a surprise. It's gone.
Are you sure you didn't leave it at the tailor's? You know how absent-minded men are sometimes.
Now, look here, Janet. If this is a joke...
Harry, I tell you, I never saw your new suit.
Well, then where is it?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe a moth ate it.
He must have been pretty hungry. He ate the buttons, too.
Mom! Well, Daddy, what's the matter?
I can't find it. That's what's the matter.
Your father has mislaid his new suit, dear.
I tell you, I did not mislay it. I hung it right here in this closet. Now it's gone.
Oh, God.
Man doesn't just go around thinking he put a suit of clothes in the closet and then not... What do you mean, oh, golly?
Nothing. Was it a gray one?
Yes, Corliss, it was a gray one. A new gray one. Why?
Nothing, only... Oh, golly.
Will you please stop saying, oh, golly?
All right, Daddy. Holy cow!
Corliss, I suspect from your attitude that you know something about the disappearance of my new suit, do you?
Yes, Daddy.
Corliss.
Well, Corliss?
Well, Daddy, it's really all your fault. This morning in court, I got to feeling so sorry for poor Mr. Jenkins that this afternoon, Dexter and I went to see his family to see if there wasn't something we could do for him.
Go on.
Hello there.
Hello, Harry. Is there anything the matter?
No. Why?
Well, you sound kind of worried.
Well, do I? Well, it's nothing, really. You know that lawsuit of mine against Jenkins?
I should know it, the way Corliss is mixed up in it.
Well, maybe Corliss is right, after all.
What do you mean, Harry?
Well, it seems that the reason Johnson is suing Jenkins is not for the reason I thought at all.
Really?
No. Johnson knows about this invention. He's suing so that the court will award him actual satisfaction of the debt now. He told me today he'd accept the plans of the invention as the complete settlement of the debt.
But, Harry, that doesn't seem fair.
Well, you're darn right it isn't fair. That invention's worth anything. It's worth a darn sight more than the back rent, and Johnson must know it, or he wouldn't be so anxious to get it.
It seems to me Johnson should buy the invention for whatever it's worth and then deduct the money Jenkins owes him.
That's absolutely right.
Well, really, Harry, I don't see why you represent a man who's so unscrupulous.
I didn't know he was unscrupulous. I haven't handled his business very long.
Are you going to go through with the case?
I'll have to. Legally, Johnson's not suing for the invention. He just thinks that by squeezing Jenkins, he can get it for next to nothing.
I see. Well, what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I can...
Hello! Hello, Mom! Hello, Daddy!
Hi, Mr. Archer.
Honey.
Hello, Mrs. Archer.
Well, hello. Where have you been all day?
Oh, just around.
Yeah, around at the Jenkins. Holy cow, they've got more clothes than I have.
Well, most everyone has, Dexter.
Yeah, but you ought to see what Corliss got them today. All day we've been canvassing the neighborhood for things.
What about my suit?
Yeah, they got that, too.
I know that, Dexter. I'm asking Corliss if she got it back.
No, it isn't back from the tailor's yet.
Corliss?
I'm sorry, Daddy, but Mr. Jenkins had already taken it to the altar. He was very grateful.
Yeah. Mr. Jenkins said we were lifesavers.
If he meant you had holes in your heads, he was right. Grateful. I should think he would be grateful. Why,
I should think that's the least we could do after all the unhappiness you're causing him. Honestly, I'm simply mortified when I think of my own father persecuting those poor people.
Well, and how do the Jenkins like the idea of accepting gifts from the daughter of their persecutor?
Holy cow, they don't know who Corliss is. If she told them she's your daughter, they'd probably kick her right out of the house.
Well, who do they think you are, exactly?
Well, I told him I was Carlos Brown.
Why Brown?
Well, you mentioned that man you went to school with named Ned Brown, so I just happened to remember it, and I told him I was his daughter.
Oh, this is the end. First I have my dinner taken away, then my new suit, and now my own daughter.
Your fishing rod, too.
What?
Sure, we were cleaning out the attic today, and Corliss found an old fishing rod, and she said you never used it anymore, so we took it to the Jenkins.
May I ask what Mr. Jenkins is going to do with my fishing rod?
Nothing. Mrs. Jenkins is going to use it. She's taking it apart to use for curtain rods.
Corliss, tomorrow I will bring home my golf clubs. Mr. Jenkins can no doubt find a way to make a new type egg beater out of them.
Well, I don't like to say anything, Mr. Archer, but I've seen you play golf, and I think you'd play better with an egg beater.
All right, Dexter, that's enough.
It's dinner time, Corliss. Run upstairs and wash your hands and face.
Yes, Mom.
Would you like to stay for dinner, Dexter?
No, boy, I'll stay.
We're only having leftovers.
Oh, that's all right. We are, too, but I always think other people's leftovers are much more interesting than your own. It's fun trying to guess what they were left over from.
Well, we better get at them quick. In a day or two, there won't be anything left over in this house but the barest necessities of life. Janet, great news.
Why? What happened?
The Jenkins thing's finally settled.
Well, I'm glad of that. Did you win the suit?
I'll say I did, but that's not the best part of it. While the jury was still out, Jenkins got word that his invention had been patented, and a manufacturer sent him a check for $5,000 as an advance.
Harry, that's wonderful.
You should have seen the look on Johnson's face when he heard about it.
Was he mad?
Sure he is. Now all he can do is accept the money the court has awarded, and Jenkins can well afford that now.
Well, I think that's wonderful, but how in the world did Mr. Jenkins find a lawyer to patent his invention for him? I thought you...
Mom! Daddy, I've got the most wonderful news about Mr. Jenkins.
Yes, dear Daddy told me what happened. Isn't that nice?
Golly, are the Jenkins excited?
Well, it seems to me they're not the only ones who are excited.
Well, Daddy, now I hope you're satisfied.
What do you mean?
Well, you won your suit and your precious Mr. Johnson has his money. But I'm glad there are some lawyers in this world who understand human nature and are willing to help other people in distress.
You mean some lawyer helped Mr. Jenkins get his invention patented?
Yes, it was the strangest thing. The other day, Mr. Jenkins got a mysterious call from Washington, and some man Mr. Jenkins never heard of asked him if he'd send on the plans for his invention, and he'd see what he could do.
You don't say. What was this lawyer's name?
I don't know. I didn't ask Mr. Jenkins.
Uh-huh. I think I see.
What do you see, Mom?
Janet.
Yes, Harry, I see a lot of things. And I like what I see.
What do you mean, Mom?
Nothing, Corliss.
Well, I happened to notice our phone bill today, and the toll charges were unusually high this month.
But what has that got to do with Mr.
Jenkins? Corliss, about my suit. I'm sure Mr. Jenkins won't object to giving it back now that he's going to be rich.
Well, Daddy, I don't know how to tell you this, but the suit was altered to fit Mr. Jenkins, and it would never fit you now.
Well, I can have it altered back to my size.
Well, maybe you could, Daddy, but... Well, Mr. Jenkins gave it away.
What?
Yes, Daddy. He was so happy and so grateful to the people who've been helping him that he gave the suit to... Well, to someone who's been helping him.
Oh, no. Who is this benefactor who's got my new suit?
Well, Daddy, I...
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Dexter.
Good evening, Dexter. I... Dexter Franklin, take off my suit.
More about Corliss Archer and her family in just a moment.
My daddy is about the most wonderful man in the whole world. Imagine him calling up his friend in Washington about Mr. Jenkins and then not even letting Mr. Jenkins know about it.
Yeah.
That's the test of a really great man. He does a nice thing and doesn't talk about it.
Yeah, he sure is a swell guy. Why, do you know when I gave him back the suit, he just looked at it and then looked at me and said, "No, Dexter, you keep it."
There. You see? That just proves did a nice thing like that and didn't even tell me about it.
Yeah.
I wonder why he gave the suit back to you.
I don't know. He couldn't have minded those grease spots for my bicycle. Because they'll come out when it's cleaned. And he couldn't have minded the tear in the coat for my car door because that can be mended. Maybe he just didn't like the car.
Dexter Franklin, how can you say a thing like that about Daddy? If he gave you the suit, it's because he wanted you to have it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. He sure is a wonderful guy.
Meet Corliss Archer, starring Janet Waldo, is based on characters created by F. Hugh Herbert. It is a James L. Saphir production, directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Today's script was written by Mr. McAvity. Dexter is played by Sam Edwards and Mr. and Mrs. Archer by Fred Shields and Irene Tedrow. The music was composed and conducted by Bill Fontaine. Corliss Archer, played by Shirley Temple, will be seen on the screen very shortly in A Kiss for Corliss. This is John Heasted inviting you to join us again next week when America's business-managed electric light and power companies again invite you to meet Corliss Archer. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And Meet Corliss Archer was kind of CBS's response to NBC's program called A Date with Judy. And that show we just heard was from April 9 of 1950. Again, they were trying to compete with A Date with Judy, with which we've also featured on this program in the past. And there was a series of feature films at that time. Well, we are going to be listening to that very odd Baby Snook Show. That's coming up next. This is Radio Vault on 89.3 WHFR.
Earn your associate's degree in applied sciences with Henry Ford College's Automotive Technology Program. This program offers an in-depth study of multiple systems found in today's vehicles. HFC's Automotive Technology Program is fully certified by the National Institute for Automotive Technology Program by the ASE Educational Foundation. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
Light from the Underground is a radio show filled with musical surprises. You'll get a chance to hear new music, often artists you aren't familiar with, and we might even mix in some classics that you haven't thought of in years. I'm Bill Keith, and I enjoy digging through all the music we've received to spotlight the best music I can find. I focus on singer-songwriters across a wide variety of genres. Add in some blues or Americana, maybe a bit of gospel music, and some indie rock to mix things up, and you have Light from the Underground. Thanks to Henry Ford College for making WHFR possible. Their investment allows us to create radio that's focused on Dearborn and the greater Detroit area. And thank you for being a loyal listener. Check out Light from the Underground Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 89.3 WHFR.FM. We're making waves.
Where's Henry? Oh.
My ass.
And now to the Higgins household, where Daddy is putting Snooks to sleep by telling her a story. Have you ever heard the story of Jack and the Beanstalk? Well, listen.
Long, long ago, in the days when giants roamed the earth, there lived in a tiny cove by the sea a poor but honest family.
Daddy!
What?
Tell me a story.
I'm telling you a story.
What's it about?
Snooks.
Oh, it's about me.
It's about a little boy named Jack who was very much like you. He was naughty and stubborn and full of mischief. One day, his mother asked him to drive their only cow to market to sell it in order that they might have food.
Gosh, I'd love to drive a cow.
Well, one can't drive a cow in the ordinary sense.
Can one honk its horns in the ordinary sense?
Snooks, I'm supposed to be putting you to sleep.
Well, why don't you sing me to sleep?
Because I'm telling you a story.
What's it about?
It's about time you're asleep. Now stop mussing the covers and lie still. Well, that's better. Now close your eyes. Are they closed?
Uh-huh.
Then imagine yourself driving a cow to market, over the hill and down through the meadow. And as you go, you sing a little song.
I'm driving a cow to market, a honking on its tooter. I think that this must be much fun than riding on a scooter.
Egad, what strange sight is this?
Egad, who are you?
I am Louis, Uncle Louis, the magician. And it would please me mightily to cheat thee of that handsome cow. Tell me, maid, doth she give much milk?
Yes, sir. She gives a whole cow full.
Ooh. Doth one have trouble milking her?
One hath trouble making her lie on her back.
Well, why dost thou milk her when she's lying on her back?
So the cream will come to the top.
Ah, does the old cow give cream, forsooth?
No, sir. The dusty old cow gives cream for coffee.
Well, must one whip her to get it?
One must whip her to get whipped cream.
I see. On second thought, perhaps I had better purchase an automobile. Thou dost look awful silly driving a cow.
On second thought, thou hadst better drive by a cow.
Why?
Thou wouldst look silly looking an automobile.
I see. In that case, I'll swap thee some magic beans for thy cow.
Magic beans?
Yes, and they'll grow into a giant stalk. Unconditionally guaranteed, not for years, not for life, but forever.
I think I'll be sorry. I've got to explain to Mommy, and you know what that means. I got to tell her I sold her cow, and all I got was beans.
Is that you, Snooks?
Yes, Mommy.
Well, what did you get for the cow?
Beans.
Beans?
Yeah, but they're magic. They'll grow into a giant stalk.
Oh, you naughty little girl. What can a giant stalk possibly bring us?
Giant babies.
Snooks, who cheated you out of our cow?
His name was Lloyd.
But what's his full name?
Lloyd, full or empty.
Oh, dear. How could he have cheated us that way?
Oh, it's all right, Mommy. We cheated him, too.
Oh, well, how?
We emptied all the milk out of the cow yesterday.
Oh, what a child. Your father will have something to say about this.
Well, Snooks, there's nothing left but to depend on my vegetable garden for food. Is that bad?
It's awful, ain't it, Daddy?
Indeed. You'll be lucky if you get anything from my garden.
That's what I mean.
I'll have you know I'm a veritable Luther Burbank, an expert at horticultural pursuits.
Yeah, but can you grow vegetables?
I can raise anything. What about my celery?
Mummy says that hasn't been raised in years.
Celery, not salary. Salary isn't something you eat.
Then why does Mummy say it's peanuts?
Skip it, and stop criticizing my garden. I'd like to see you grow anything better.
All right. I'll throw my magic seeds on the ground.
A lot of good that'll do.
Oh, look, Daddy. Look how quick they grow. Listen to them pop.
It's amazing. They're popping out of the ground. Now they're almost as big as trees. What are they?
Maybe they're bubblegum trees.
No, they're bean sprouts. But gigantic. Look at that stalk grow. That big one. They must be something special in the way of beans.
Something special, did you say? Friend, you ought to see the beans from which Sanka coffee is made.
Hey there, look at your bean stalk now.
Oh, Willie, it's up to the sky.
Well, we've got no time to waste. Snooks, one of us will have to climb it.
Why?
Because that's how the story of Snooks and the beanstalk goes. This is a fairy tale.
Is it?
Yes, now do as I say.
Will you thank me if I don't?
No.
You're right. This is a fairy tale.
Then let's start climbing. I'll carry this knapsack and hatchet.
Wait! Ha! We're off in the clouds, Daddy. We must be 70 million miles high.
I think for your sake, we'd better turn back.
But I ain't tired.
I know what's best for a frail little child like you.
Maybe I better drop your knapsack and hatchet.
Always thinking of yourself. What if you are carrying a few things on your back? I'm carrying my share of the weight.
Yeah, but you're carrying it on your stomach.
It all adds up to the same thing.
Look, Daddy, we're going to the top of that big cliff.
Oh, thank heavens. Now we can get off this darn beanstalk. There we are.
Where?
Seems to be a sort of a forest. You stay here, Snooks. I'll look ahead a bit.
All right.
La da da dee da. Well, well, well. Hello, little lady.
Well, well, well. Who are you?
I'm a magic prince.
I met a prince once.
Truly? And how didst they call him?
He prince.
'Twas a hound. And what did this prince do when thou called him?
He jumped into my lap.
Well, I regret I cannot do the same, fair maid. Any other suggestions?
You can lick my face.
Egad, thou art a charming little wench. What wouldst thou say if I took thee on my lap?
You know what I'd say?
What?
Tell me a story.
And suppose I sang thee a story? Wouldst thou lend me thine ears?
If I lend thee my ears, what wouldst I listen with?
Listen with thy heart, prithee.
Yes, sir, prithee.
And now, fair maiden, I cannot sit here idle any longer. I must be gone.
When you get up, will you do me a favor?
Yes, what is it?
Let me get off your lap first.
Oh, I can do better favors than that. I can tell you where you can find a magic harp that plays itself, and a hen that lays golden eggs.
That's very interesting, friend. And where are these treasures to be found?
In the giant's castle. Just follow that winding road until you come to it.
Well, you heard what he said, Snooks. Let's go.
But a giant.
What are you worried about? You've got me with you.
That's what I'm worried about.
Now I ask you, are you afraid of a giant?
Now I answer you, yes.
Well, I'm not.
If he speaks up, the overgrown pup, I'll give him a black and a blue eye. I'll knock him down and then beat him up. You believe me? Well, don't you?
Do I? I'm really scared, Daddy.
You're not?
No. If he's as big as a tree, he won't scare me. I'll jump on his tummy and kick him and kick him. And if that ain't enough,
and he really gets tough,
we'll bet you
that mummy can lick him.
That must be the giant's castle up ahead, Snooks. What do those little signs by the side of the road say?
The giant's rough, but let him rave. Don't take his guff. Use Burma shave.
Well, this must be the place, all right. Oh, where's the doorbell?
There isn't any. You'll have to blow that horn, I guess.
Oh. All right. I'll blow it.
Look, the door's opening by itself.
That giant has everything.
He hasn't got any oil.
Won't you come in?
She's talking to you, Daddy. I'll wait here.
What an enormous creature.
She must be 5 stories tall. Is she a giant, Daddy?
No, I'm his wife.
Oh, the little woman, eh? Ha ha. Not bad.
Ha ha.
What's the matter?
I'm scared.
You have nothing to be scared of. I'm going to put you to work in the kitchen.
Are you
going
to cook me?
I don't have to. If you don't do your work, the giant will eat you just the way you are.
He'll be sorry if he swallows me.
Why?
I'll drag my feet all the way down.
No nonsense now. Get in the kitchen and go to work.
Hurry up, Snooks. The giant's wife is in some other part of the house. Maybe we can escape.
It's an earthquake, Daddy.
No, the giant's coming. We've got to hide.
Where?
There's only one place. In the oven. Quick.
All right.
E-5-4-1. I smell the blood of an Englishman.
He smells the blood of an Englishman. Did you hear that, Snooks?
No, speak of the English.
Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bone to make my bread.
Daddy.
What?
Would you rather be dry or whole wheat?
Now, don't be funny. Peek out through that crack in the oven and see what the giant looks like.
All right. He's about 6 feet one tall.
6 feet one?
Yeah, 1 foot and 1 mile.
Oh.
One of his eyes is green. One of his is red.
Horrible.
I can't see what color the other one is.
Oh, dear. What's he doing, Snooks?
Let me see. He's eating a little.
Little what?
A little elephant.
What a monster.
Oh, look. He's got a horse pulling the wagon load of food around the table. He just ate the food. He just ate the wagon.
What was that?
He spit out the wheels.
Wife?
Yes, big boy?
Bring me the hen that lays the golden egg.
Pooey, the golden egg!
Quiet, he'll hear us.
Here's your hen. I'm going to bed.
Good night, my dear. My good little brown hen. Lay! Hurry up! Lay!
I'm trying as hard as I can!
Look, Snooks, a real golden egg.
Yeah.
Do you know how much golden eggs are worth?
I'll bet they're worth almost as much as real eggs.
Another one. What do you think of that, Snooks?
I'd rather see it lay an ice cream soda.
Enough, little hen. Enough. I think I'll sleep now.
The giant's asleep.
Now I think we can get the hen and climb down the beanstalk.
Now don't make a sound. Here, we can step out of the oven right onto the table.
Mm-hmm.
My, what big cups and saucers.
What's the matter?
Help, I'm sinking.
What's the matter, Daddy?
I'm in quicksand.
No, you ain't. You're standing in some mashed potatoes.
Oh, well, come on. We'll get that ham and scram.
Gee, a giant sleeps awful loud.
That's better than not sleeping.
Oh, hello, little elf.
Hello.
What's the matter? Don't you sleep?
Me? Sure, I'm thinking about the people who don't. Especially the thousands of people who drink ordinary coffee and then are kept tossing and turning all night because of the caffeine in it.
Dear me, oh dear, this is no time for singing. So please don't say that word.
What word?
The magic word that makes me sing.
Oh, you mean abalone.
Heavens to Betsy, there's no stopping now.
Oh, the giant's waking up.
What do we do, Daddy?
Grab the hen and beat it.
All right.
What are you doing to that hen?
You told me to beat it.
I mean, we've got to scram. Grab the hen and let's go. Oh, here's a shortcut around the spinach.
Oh, look. A big puddle.
That's not a puddle. We're up on the giant's plate, and that's just some gravy he left. Come on, we'll wade across.
I can't.
Why not? Too deep?
No.
Too hot?
No.
Well, what's wrong?
Too salty.
Oh, come on. You too, Mrs. Hen. We'll use this cracker for a raft. Up we go.
You'd better not come with us on the cracker, Daddy.
Why?
Remember the doctor told you to stay off the starches?
Very funny. Save your humor for a better time. Luckily, the giant's asleep again.
This is fun, ain't it, Mrs. Hen?
If you must know, I do not like being on a plate.
Neither do I. I won't rest easy until we're safely down the beanstalk.
Here we are at the bottom, Daddy. Are you all right, Mrs. Hen?
Our fortune's made. Go ahead, Mrs. Hen. Lay a few golden eggs just as a starter.
Really, folks? I'm not in the mood. I'm so empty.
Then lay some gold bubbles.
Don't have to. If you don't do your work, the giant will eat you just as you are.
He'll be sorry if he swallows me.
Why?
I'll drag my feet all the way down.
No nonsense now. Get in the kitchen and go to work.
Oh, hurry up, Snooks. The giant's wife is in some other part of the house. Maybe we can escape.
Yeah. Well, It's an earthquake, Daddy.
No, the giant's coming. We've got to hide.
Where?
There's only one place. In the oven, quick.
Oh.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman.
He smells the blood of an Englishman. Did you hear that, Snooks?
No speak the English.
Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread.
Daddy.
What?
Would you rather be rye or whole wheat?
Don't be funny. Peek out through that crack in the oven and see what the giant looks like.
All right. He's about 6 feet and one tall.
6 feet one?
Yeah, 6 feet and 1 mile.
No.
One of his eyes is green. And one of his eyes is red.
Horrible.
I can't see what color the other one is.
Oh, dear. What's he doing, Snooks?
Let me see. He's eating a little.
A little what?
A little elephant.
What a monster.
Oh, look. He's got a horse pulling a wagon load of food around the table. He just ate the food. He just ate the wagon.
What was that?
He spit out the wheels.
Wife! Wife!
Yes, big boy?
Bring me the hen that lays the golden egg.
Wait, a golden egg?
Quiet, he'll hear us.
Here's your hen. I'm going to bed.
Good night, my dear. My good little brown hen. Lay. Hurry up. Lay.
These things take time.
Look, Snooks, a real golden egg.
Yeah.
Do you know how much golden eggs are worth?
I bet they're worth almost as much as real eggs.
Another one. What do you think of that, Snooks?
I'd rather see it lay in ice cream soda.
Enough, little hen. That's enough, eh? Let the girl sleep now.
The giant's asleep.
Now we can get the hen and climb down the beanstalk.
Oh, don't make a sound. Here, we can step out of the oven right onto the table. My, what big cups and saucers. Don't!
What's the matter, Daddy?
Help, I'm sinking. I'm in quicksand.
No, you ain't. You're standing in some mashed potatoes.
Oh, well, come on. We'll get that hen and scram.
Gee, the giant sleeps awful loud.
That's better than not sleeping.
Oh, hello, little elf. What's the matter? Don't you sleep?
Me? Sure. I'm thinking about the people who don't, especially the thousands of people who drink ordinary coffee and then are kept tossing and turning all night because of the caffeine in it.
Not bad, not bad. You know, I can sing, too.
Oh, hens don't sing.
I know, but I learned how to sing before anyone told me that. Of course, I only sing when someone says the magic word, abalone.
Abalone?
Heavens to Betsy. Oh, dear, this is no time for singing, so please don't say that word.
What word?
The magic word that makes me sing.
Oh, you mean abalone.
Heavens to Betsy, there's no stopping now.
Grab the hand and beat it.
All right.
What are you doing to the hand?
You told me to beat it.
I mean we gotta scram. Grab the hand and let's go. Oh, here's a shortcut around the spinach.
Oh, look, a big bundle.
That's no
big puddle.
We're up on the giant's plate and that's just some gravy he left. Come on, we'll wade across.
I can't.
Why not? Too deep?
No.
Too hot?
No.
Well, what's wrong?
Too salty.
Oh, come on. You too, Mrs. Hen. We'll use this cracker for a raft.
You better
up
not.
We go.
You better not come with us on the cracker, Daddy.
Why?
Remember the doctor told you to stay off of starches.
Very funny. Save the humor for a better time. Luckily, the giant's asleep again.
This is fun, ain't it, Mrs. Hen?
If you must know, I do not like being on a plate.
Neither do I. I won't rest easy until we're safely down the beanstalk.
Here we are at the bottom, Daddy. Are you all right, Mrs. Hen?
Oh, our fortune's made. Go ahead, Mrs. Hen. Lay a few golden eggs just as a start.
Really, folks, I'm not in the mood. I'm so empty.
Oh, I guess she's hungry. But it's simple. Give her something to eat, and she'll lay a golden egg.
Here, Mrs. Hen, eat my daddy's watch.
No, what's the idea?
It's gold.
If we have to feed a gold, what good is it? There's no margin of profit.
It's no use. My soul is empty. I reckon I need the magic harp.
The magic harp in the giant's castle?
Yep, I do believe I won't be able to lay another golden egg until you get it.
Well, Snooks, here we go up this talk again.
Oh, I'm tired, Daddy.
Maybe we can ride up this trip. Here's a bean on the windowsill.
Are you going to throw it on the ground, Daddy?
Right. And we stand over it thusly.
Here it comes.
Hold it tight.
Wait! It's a regular bean elevator.
Going up. Step to the rear of the stalk, please.
Here we are on the giant's land again, Daddy.
And here's the winding road. Let's go. Oh, we're going to meet the giant. We're defiant, by the way. We're not afraid of such a very terrible giant. We're not lying when we say we're not afraid, not much. We're going to meet the giant.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman.
He's always smelling you, Daddy.
Keep quiet.
I don't like it in this kitchen cabinet.
Well, you ought to be thankful we found a place to hide. At least we have some ventilation.
You mean those holes in the wood? What are they?
Those are not holes.
They're not holes?
Yes.
They look like holes to me.
They are holes.
But you said they're not holes.
Oh, that's right.
What's right?
They're not holes.
Well, are they holes or aren't they holes?
Yes, they are not holes. Now, do you understand?
Yes, I don't.
Well, forget it. Look through one of them and see what the giant's doing.
Oh, he's got the magic harp on the table with him.
Play, harp. Play for me.
Gosh, Daddy, he's gonna play.
Giant's asleep. Come on, Snooks. Do you see the harp?
Mm-hmm. It's on the other side of that salt shell.
Well, grab it and run.
I got it. It's talking, Daddy.
Who called me?
Oh, he's up. Let's make a break, Snooks.
All right. Why don't we break?
Run! Here he comes, Snooks. Run, run!
Here, come back with my magic harp.
Run, Snooks, faster, faster.
How can I run faster? You're hanging onto my dress.
Hurry, Snooks. We're coming to the bottom.
I'm hurrying.
And stop shaking the beanstalk.
I ain't shaking it.
Good heavens, the giant's climbing down after us.
There he is, way at the top.
He's coming awfully fast. I'll have to chop down the beanstalk, giant and all.
Keep it up, Daddy. Just one more chop. Here it comes.
Well, Snooks, what do you got to say to that?
Timber!
Snook, stop mussing your covers.
Huh? Is it morning, Daddy?
Oh, don't tell me you were asleep all the time I was telling you the story.
What story?
Jack and the Beanstalk.
What's it about?
Oh, good night, Snook.
Good night, Daddy.
This has been the new Baby Snooks Show, starring Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks with Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Carmen Dragon and his orchestra, and the young Paramount singing star Bob Graham. Clara Cluck appeared tonight through the courtesy of Walt Disney, producer of the Technicolor musical Make Mine Music, soon to be released. Stay tuned to this station for The Adventures of the Thin Man, which follows immediately. And be sure to listen next week at this same time for the Baby Snooks Show. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking. Yellow twins are hard to find, but keep on looking in your store. When sugar shortages are over, there'll be more.
And there you have Baby Snooks. A rehearsal from December 9, 1945. Hanley Stafford, Fanny Bryce, and Harlow Wilcox. As we wind up our second hour of Radio Vault, getting ready for the Lux Radio Theater. As you know, Radio Vault comes your way every Tuesday from 10 in the morning till 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock today, we have got yesterday's episode of This Just In. We will also hear an encore performance of Mountain Stage. That's coming up later this afternoon. What's coming up on Saturday? Let's find out, shall we?
Welcome to WHFR. My name is The Diva, and my show is on Saturdays from 5 to 8 p.m. It's called Lyrical Infusion with The Diva, but I'm nothing without you. Why don't you make a date with The Diva and come let me play just for you. Saturdays, 5 to 8 p.m., Lyrical Infusion with The Diva, and you, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
The Henry Ford College Learning Lab is your central location for academic support.
They strive to assist students and faculty with techniques that are evidence-based and will increase your academic success. The Learning Lab offers in-person and online services to help you succeed. They offer tutorial assistance provided by faculty, professional, and student tutors, one-on-one academic assistance, including strategies for improving test taking and studying, workshops and presentations to classes or groups on strategies for learning success, study groups and review sessions on a variety of subjects, hands-on learning resources such as anatomical models in our bone room, computers, printing, copying, and scanning. For more information, please visit hfcc.edu/learnlab.
Listener supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Flakes, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Humphrey Bogart and Walter Huston in The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's play is an exciting, dramatic story of a man's greed for gold. It was one of the really fine motion pictures of recent years, the Warner Brothers hit, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. And tonight we present the original stars of the film, Humphrey Bogart and Walter Huston, the latter in the role that won him an Academy Award. Our stars are on stage, and here's the curtain for The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, starring Humphrey Bogart as Dobbs and Walter Huston as Howard.
First time I come up with them was in Tampico. That's a seaport town. Tampico, northeast Mexico. I was having a beer near the docks when they came in. Hot Sunday afternoon.
You a fellow American?
Yeah, that's right, mister. What do you want?
I want to know about a guy named McCormick. You ever hear of him?
McCormick? McCormick. Oh, yeah, in the oil business. That's right, oil.
Have you seen him lately? Where can we find him?
Well, as you gentlemen, I'd run clear McCormick. Hires a crew to work in the oil field, see, then he never pays him off. Slick. Slick like oil.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't mean to tell me he's hooked two smart fellow Americans like you.
That's right, Pop. 6 weeks in the oil fields, 120 in the shade. Only I ain't through with Mr. McCormick. Fred C. Dobbs is going to get his wages, see?
Come on, Dobbs, let's have a beer.
I could hear him talking with the bar, drifters, both of them. Not what you call good friends, either. Just a couple of guys that happened to wind up in Tampico. Yeah, just like me. Only difference is they're young. Yeah, I see him again that night. They came wandering in the flop house. 50 centavos for a bed. Me? I'm sitting up talking to a couple of sailors. The subject of the conversation is gold.
Hey, Pop, you mean there's gold here in Mexico?
Not 10 days from this very spot. Whole mountain of gold's waiting for the right guy to come along, discover a treasure, and then tickle her until she lets him have it. Question is, are you the right guy? Tell me something. Why is gold worth some 20 bucks an ounce?
I don't know, Pop. Because it's scarce, I guess.
1,000 men say go searching for gold. After 6 months, one of them's lucky. 1 out of 1,000. His find represents not only his own labor, but that of 999 others to boot. That's 6,000 months or 500 years, scrabbling over mountains, going hungry and thirsty. An ounce of gold, mister, is worth what it is because of the human labor that went into finding the getting of it.
Never thought of it just like that.
Well, there's no other explanation, mister. You start out, you tell yourself you'll be satisfied with 25,000 handsome smackers worth of it. So help my lord and cross my heart. Fine resolution. After much of sweating yourself dizzy and growing short on provisions and finding nothing, you finally come down to 15,000 and 10. Finally, you say, Lord, let me just find $5,000 worth and never ask for anything more the rest of my life.
Yeah, $5,000 is still a lot of dough.
Yeah, here in this joint seems like a lot, but I tell you, if it was to make a real strike, you couldn't be dragged away. Not even the threat of miserable death could keep you from trying to add 10,000 more. Get 10, you want 25. 25, you want to get 50. 50, 100. Like roulette. One more turn, you know, always one more.
It wouldn't be that way with me.
Oh, hello, mister. You didn't find McCormick, huh?
I'll find him. But about gold, I swear it wouldn't be that way with me. I take only what I set out to get, even if there was still $500,000 lying around, just waiting to be picked up.
I have dug for gold all over the world. I know what gold does to a man.
You talk as if you once struck it rich. How about it, Pop?
Yeah, what are you doing in here? A down and outer.
That's the gold, mister. That's what it makes of us. Never knew prospector yet that died rich. Sure, I'm an odd old bone now, but say, don't you guys think the spirit's gone? I'm all set to shoulder a pick and shovel anytime anybody's willing to share expenses.
I bet you are.
Rather go by myself. Going it alone's the best way. You've got to have a stomach for loneliness. On the other hand, going with a partner or two is dangerous. Murder's always lurking about. Partners accusing each other of all sorts of meanness.
Now, why should finding gold make a man any different? If he's the right kind of a man to start with, gold ain't going to change him.
You ever tried running her down, mister? Ever tried prospecting?
No, no, I ain't.
You didn't have the answer to that. Yeah, I knew that answer.
You know it all, Pop. Well, I think I'll go to sleep and dream about piles of gold growing bigger and bigger and bigger.
A week later, I see him again, Dobbs and Curtin, all lumps and bloodied up. Looking for me, they were, something to tell me. They take me to a cantina and put a bottle of beer under my nose.
We found McCormick, Pop.
Yeah, and it looks like you found a peck of trouble, too.
Well, we got our wages, every last penny.
Yeah, we've been thinking. Why not try digging gold for a change? Well, it ain't any riskier than waiting around here for a break. And this is the country where the nuggets of gold are just crying for you to take them out of the ground and make them shine on coins. Now the fingers and necks are swell dames. Well, that's what you said the other night, wasn't it?
Yeah, what's so funny? Living out in the open is cheaper than living in town. Our money would last longer.
Yeah, sure it would, sure. Only you have to have equipment. Ever think of that? How much that all cost?
Well, we figured we'd ask you. We ain't denying anything. When you come right down to it, we don't know much about prospecting. Of course, if you wasn't so old...
Maybe I'd go with you, huh? Is that what's on your mind? You want to take me along?
Would you go?
Would I? Say, what a question. Of course I'll go. Anytime, any day, out for gold. Always at your service. Well, I got 200 American bucks ready cash. Last money I got in the world. How much do you guys got to put in?
150 bucks. Curtin here has the same.
Total 500. Ain't hardly enough to buy the tools, weapons, and essential provisions.
What do we need guns for?
Well, for one thing, meat. For another thing, bandits. Bandit country's where we'd be gone. We ought to have 600 bucks between us.
Well, that much, huh?
Can't dig up anymore, huh?
Not a red cent.
Senor Dobbs, I look all over for you. Give me my money, senor. Give me my money.
Get away from me, will you?
Senor, you don't comprehend.
You comprehend a glass full of beer right in your kisser if you don't leave me alone. I tell you, I don't want any lottery tickets. Now beat it.
Lottery tickets? Well, that's for gambling men.
But always whoever wins a lucky number gives a seller a present of 10%.
Hey, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Dobbs. He's trying to tell you he sold you the winning ticket.
Here, look. The least of all the winning numbers. You buy ticket for 5 centavos, remember? 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I remember. What about it?
You win, senor. A 200-peso prize.
Oh, give me that paper, oh. Just look at that fat, rich, printed number.
You got the ticket?
Sure, I got the ticket. Oh, 200 pesos. Welcome, sweet little smackaroos. Here, son, here's a present for you with my blessing.
Go to the lottery office, senor. Get the money.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations yourself. You stand a profit out of this the same as I do.
How do you figure that?
But did he just say we needed 600 bucks? Well, that's what we got now, ain't it?
Yes, sir. Just like that. Stroke of fate. Fortunate circumstance.
But how come you're putting up for me?
Because this is an all or nothing proposition. We make a find, we'll be lighting cigars with $100 bills. If we don't, the difference between what you put up and what I put up ain't enough to keep me from being right back where I was this afternoon, polishing the park bench with the seat of my pants. Put her there, pardon.
Thanks, Dobbs.
Well, gentlemen, now here's what we do. We'll take a train to Perla. That's a little town at the foot of the Sierra Madre Mountains. And there, when we're there, we'll buy our burrs and get away from the railroad. No use looking for gold anywhere near a railroad. You gotta have, we gotta go where there's no trails at all. Just bandits.
Now, that sounds okay to me. Okay, partner?
Sure.
Yeah. We gotta go where no surveyor, anybody who knows anything about prospecting, has ever been there before. Well, drink up, gentlemen. Drink up. We'll buy a map and some railroad tickets. Bought about half our gear there in Tampico and then took the train for Perla. About 50 miles from Perla out in the desert, there's a big boulder on the tracks. Bandits trying to raid the train.
Hey, they're retreating. Look, they're retreating. Look, they're riding off.
this thing. It's come back. Beat him, will you?
Hey, save your bullets, Mr. Dobbs. You're too far off now.
I got three of them. Credit me with three. How many did you get?
Couple, I guess.
Bandits. Guess they were expected. That's how come so many Federal soldiers riding on this train.
That bandit that rode right up to the train. The one with the gold hat.
Yeah, I had my sights on him nice as you please. But the train gave a jolt and I missed him. I sure wish I could have got him.
Well, you boys cooled off enough to look at this map?
Huh? Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, it ain't much of a map. Don't properly show whether it's mountain or desert. That shows the makers of the map themselves don't know for sure. That's good. What are you doing, Dobbs?
Why, reloading. Can't tell if them bandits may come back.
Yeah, that's right. Well, wake me up when the shooting starts.
Una A con una media luna arriba. Esto es lo mismo. Una A con una media luna arriba, my
friend. Hey, Pop. What's he saying, the storekeeper?
Well, he's proven he's got a right to sell us these burrs. They all got the same brand, see? Letter A. Elsewise, some native or Indian might meet up with us and claim our burrs.
I will load your supplies on the burro, senor.
Oh, thanks, son. Thanks.
Yeah. My father is much worried for you, senor.
Worried? What's he worried for?
Yeah, we paid him, didn't we?
Well, he says we're going into very wild country, jungles, and then high mountains. And tigers so big and strong, they can climb a tree with a burr in their mouth.
Tigers? Here?
Yeah, more like leopards, I guess. Well, I'm glad to hear such tall tales, gentlemen. That means mighty few outsiders have ever set foot there.
Yeah, well, let's get going, then. Come on, kid, shake it up. We're in a hurry. Get them burrs loaded. Hey, Curtin, take it easy. That is mountain climbing. Ain't like a walk around the block.
I'm dead. Let's sit a while.
Yeah. If there is gold in these mountains, how long has it been here? Millions and millions of years, wouldn't it? And then what's our hurry? A couple of days, more or less, ain't gonna matter.
Look at the old man, way ahead of us there.
Yeah.
You and me scared we'd have to pack him on our backs.
Yeah. That was when I took him for an ordinary human being. He's part goat. Let him climb, will you?
If I'd have known what prospecting meant, I'd have stayed in Tampico and waited for another job to turn up.
Hey, Curtin, look. Look.
What's the matter?
These rocks. Look, these little veins running through the rocks. Look at them glitter, yellow, too, like gold.
Gold? We've been sitting on a gold mine.
Get the water bag. Wash some of that dirt off. Hey, Howard, come back. We found something.
Yeah, we found something. Here's the water.
The vein all over the rock. We've struck it, Curtin. Look over there. It's in all the rocks, just like he said, a bonanza.
Howard, look at these rocks.
Oh, they're full of gold, veins of gold.
Yeah, that's what you wanted to show me? Yeah, I saw it when I passed by. Gentlemen, this stuff wouldn't pay you dinner for a carload.
It ain't gold?
Pyrite, fool's gold. Oh, not there ain't plenty of the real stuff hereabouts. Walked over it four or five times already.
You mean we've been passing it up? Why?
Not enough of it. Not enough to pay us a good day's wages. Well, you figure to sit it out here all day?
Come on, Kurt, let's go.
Next time you fellas strike it rich, holler for me before it starts splashing water around. Water's precious. Sometimes it'll be more precious than gold. Get, you burro. Get, burro. That was a fine country, inspiring. Didn't see a soul, just the beasts of the jungle and birds, all bright, gay colors. Felt good, 10 years younger. Better man than either of them. Wore them down to just plain gristle. Coming out, well, they just lay on the ground, puffing and groaning. Dude dogged out to set up and eat their beans.
I can't move. I just want to lie here.
Yeah.
Hey, ain't you guys going to eat some beans? You want some beans? Going through some mighty rough country tomorrow. You better have some beans.
Oh, shut up, Pop. Go on, eat them up. Let us alone.
How's your feet feel, Dobbsy? Bet you jump up like a jackrabbit was a pretty woman to stroll by. Bet your feet wouldn't bother you nothing then.
That wind. It's blowing up awful cold.
Getting cold, is it? Getting cold. Feels like a norther.
Yeah.
And they blow hard. They set that desert country up down there on its hind legs. We're lucky to be up here, all right.
Lucky.
Reckon there's only a couple more days of this heavy stuff. Pretty soon it'll be leveling off. Pretty soon now.
Howard, come here.
Couple of more days, you said. That was 3 nights ago.
We've had enough, Howard. Dobbs and me, we want to give up.
Give up, huh?
Yeah. Leave the whole outfit right here. Go back to civilization.
Well, tell my whole grandmother. Go back to civilization. I got two very fine, elegant bedfellows who kick at the first drop of rain and hide the closet when thunder rumbles. My, my, my. What great prospect.
Lay off us, Howard.
Yeah, two shoe clerks is what you are. Two shoe clerks reading the magazine about prospecting for the land, gold in the land of the midnight sun. South of the border, west of the Rockies.
Shut your trap. Shut up, or I'll smash your head flat.
Go ahead. Pick up that rock and throw it. Go ahead. If you did, you'd never leave this wilderness alive. Without me, you two would die here more miserable than rats.
Leave him alone, Dobbs. Can't you see the old man's nuts?
Nuts! Nuts, am I? Let me tell you something, my two fine bedfellows. You're so dumb, there's nothing to compare you with. You're dumber than the dumbest jackass. Look at you. Look at you. Did you ever see anything you like those for being dumb specimens? You're so dumb, you don't even see the riches you're treading on with your own feet. Look at me. I'm dancing on a... I'm doing a dance on a mountain of gold.
What are you talking about? This is it? There's gold here?
What'd you expect to see? Nuggets of molten gold? Sure, it's here. Rich. Rich, too, but not rich enough for me. Yeah, and here ain't the place to dig. Comes from someplace further up. Up there. See? That's where we've got to go. Up there. Only I'm going alone. Because my two courageous companions have agreed between themselves to desert and go back. Well, go on. Get.
I'll take one more day of it. What do you say, Kurt?
One more day won't kill us.
Yeah, change your minds, huh? Thank you, my two fine friends. You move me to tears with your faith and trust in me. One more day, huh? Then you can follow my trail. Because I'm going to be camping there tonight.
This is it, Howard? This stuff right here?
Yeah, this is it, all right.
Gold. Sure don't look what I... like I thought it would.
It's just sand. That's just sand.
Yeah. It's just like plain sand. It don't glitter. I thought it would glitter.
Oh, it'll glitter when it's refined. But that's another guy's job. Yeah, you got to know how to recognize it. And that ain't all. Not to find it, not by a long shot. You got to know how to tickle her so she'll come out. Yeah. It's mighty rich, this sand. It'll pay good.
How good?
Oh, about 20 ounce to ton.
It's some $20 an ounce.
How many tons can we handle
depends
in a week?
Depends on how hard we work. Well, we better pitch our camp down the mountain a bit.
Why do that when the gold is here?
In case anybody happens by, bandits or soldiers chasing bandits or Indians, or a pretty woman out for a stroll. In that case, we'll tell them we're hunters. And maybe we'll get away with it, maybe.
Hunters? Wouldn't it be easier just to file a claim?
Easier, maybe, but not so profitable. Wouldn't be no time till an emissary from one of those big mining companies would be right up here with a paper in his hand, showing us we had no right to be here. Well, how does it feel, you fellers, to be men of property?
I'm sorry about the fuss we kicked up, Pop. Guess we was pretty dumb.
Yeah,
but we made it, and we're here. Men of property, what do you know?
Yeah, everything's going to be all right from now on, huh? Everything's going to be fine.
Sure it is. Why not?
Why not? Why not? Well, we'll find out, won't we, Dotsie? Yeah, we'll find out.
Our stars will return in a moment with Act Two of The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Here's our producer, William Keeley.
Act Two of The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, starring Humphrey Bogart as Dobbs and Walter Houston as Howard.
Oh, for a month we didn't mine a grain of ore. There were things to do first, setting up camp, corral for the birds, and sluice way out the creek to wash out the gold. Finally, the time come when we weighed our first take of the treasure.
How much, Howard? How much you figure we got?
Oh, about $5,000 worth, I reckon.
That's not bad. When do we start dividing it up?
Why divide it now? When the time comes, we're all going back together.
I'm for dividing as we go along. Make each guy responsible for his own goods.
Well, I just soon have it that way. I haven't liked the responsibility of guarding your treasure any too well.
Who asked you to, Pop?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you never asked me. Only I thought I was the most trustworthy of the three.
You? How come?
I said trustworthy. As far as being honest, well, no one can say.
I don't get it.
All right, suppose you were charged with taking care of the goods. One day I am deep in the brush and Curtin's on his way to the village to get provisions. That'd be your big chance to pack up and leave us in the cold.
Only a guy that's a thief at heart would think me likely to pull a stunt like that.
Well, right now it wouldn't be worth your while, but, well, when the pile has grown, yes, sir. Such, well, think of such things you will.
Yeah, how about yourself?
Oh, me? Well, I'm not picking the feet any longer. You fellas are a lot tougher than when we started out. Yeah, you'd have me strung up in no time. That's why I think I'm the most trustworthy.
Well, looking at it that way, I guess you're right. But let's do like Dobbs says, divide the proceeds every night.
Well, by me, gentlemen. Then each one of us will have to hide his share of the treasure from the other two, huh?
Well, why not?
Having done so, he'll have to be forever on the watch to see that his hiding place is not discovered.
And what a dirty, filthy mind you got.
Oh, no. No, not dirty. Not dirty, baby. Only I know what kind of ideas even supposedly decent people get when gold's at stake. All right, Curtin, hand me them weighing scales. Here she goes, boys, three ways.
Venison stew. Sure tastes good, Pop. Where's Dobbs?
He ate before.
Alone?
Yeah.
Tell me something, Pop. What are you going to do with all your hard-earned money?
Oh, I reckon I'll settle down some quiet place, get me a little business, hardware, grocery store, spend the better part of my time reading comic strips and adventure stories. One thing's for sure, I'm not going prospecting again.
Well, what's all that about?
Oh, we're just John Dobbsy, telling each other what we'll do when we get back.
Me? I got it all figured. First off, I'm going to get a brand new set of duds, a dozen of everything. And I'm going to a swell cafe. Order everything on the bill of fare, and if it ain't just right, and even if it is, I'm going to ball out the manager and make him take it all back.
What's next on the program?
Well, what would be?
You know what? We ought to put up some kind of a limit on our take. Agree now that when we get so much, well, we'll just pull up stakes and beat it.
What kind of a limit?
Oh, say $25,000 worth for each man.
$25,000? Small potatoes, 50 anyway. 75 would be more like it. I'm young. I need dough and plenty of it.
No use making hogs of ourselves.
Hog, am I? Maybe you don't know it. I'd be within my rights if I demanded half again as much as you get.
How come?
Well, I put up the lion's share of the cash, didn't I?
Well, so you did, Dobbsy. I always meant to pay you back.
In any civilized place, the biggest investor gets the biggest return, don't he?
That's one thing in favor of the wilds.
Oh, not that I intended to demand it, but I'd be within my rights if I did. So next time you go calling me a hog, just remember what I could have done if I'd wanted to. It's funny, ain't it, Pop? Yeah, real funny. Catch me sleeping, huh? I'm not that dumb. Hey, them guys try to put anything over on me, it'll be a costly one for both of them. Any more lip out of them and I'll let them have it. You know what's good for you? You don't monkey around with Fred C. Dobbs.
What'd you say, Dobbs?
Huh? Oh, nothing.
You better look out. Bad sign when a guy starts talking to him.
Yeah? Well, who else am I going to talk to? Certainly not to you or Curtin. And don't get the idea you two are putting anything over on me. I know what your game is.
Well, you know more than I do.
So why am I elected to go to the village tomorrow? Why me instead of you or Curtin? Time I'd be gone, give you plenty of chance to discover where I hid my goods, wouldn't it?
You got any fear along those lines? Why don't you take your goods with you?
I'd run the risk of having them taken from me by bandits?
They'd kill you anyway, Dobbsy. Just for the sport of it.
Ah, so that's it. You're hoping bandits will get me. That'd save you two a lot of trouble, wouldn't it?
All right, Dobbs. Forget about it.
Well, I ain't going to the village, see? You can go back and tell that to Curtin.
Okay, partner. I'll tell him. So Curtin went down to the village for provisions. He was all stirred up coming back. There were soldiers in the village chasing bandits. That wasn't all. He met up with an American, a fellow named Cody.
And he kept pumping me, followed me into the store, wanted to know what I was doing here.
What did you tell him?
I said I was a hunter, a professional hunter. Kept asking me, did I see anything up here that looked like gold?
Shook him off, Curtin? Got rid of him, huh?
I couldn't. He followed me.
You sure he trailed you?
Yeah, I'm sure.
What makes you so positive?
Because every time... Because if you turn around, you can see for yourself. There he is.
Hello.
All right, you. Walk over here to the fire.
I guess I'm not wanted, huh? I just couldn't resist the chance to sit around and jaw with an American.
Now, don't make any mistake, mister. We got no use for you. We're full up. No vacancies. Go back where you came from. Take our blessing with you.
Thanks.
Hungry, mister? Go on, help yourself.
Yeah. Go ahead. We don't want a guy to starve to death. Tonight you're our guest, see? But tomorrow morning, look out. No trespassing. Beware of the dogs. Get it? I got a few hides while you were gone, Curtin. 5 foxes and a tiger.
How are the skins?
Pretty good.
Excuse me for butting in. There's no wild game around here worth going after.
Yeah, you're right, mister. You're right. That's why I've made up my mind to clear out.
Yet it might be pretty good ground for something else.
I told you in the village there's no gold around here.
My boy, if there'd been one single ounce of it, I'd have smelled it, believe me.
Then you're not as smart as you appear to be.
Gold, huh? It gives me an idea. Guess I'll sleep on it, gentlemen.
Yeah, me too. See you in the morning, Cody.
Sorry, there's no room in our tent. If you want to, you can roll up here by the fire.
Oh, it's fine. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
I can't figure him out. Is he wise to us or not?
Now you guys go to sleep. I'll be watchdog for a couple of hours, and then you and Dobbs can take your turns.
You got a gun handy?
Yeah, right here.
Okay.
Didn't get much sleep last night, did you, Fred?
That's fact. We didn't.
Well, let's lay our cards on the table right now, huh? You found gold here. I know it. And because I know it, you'll have to do one of three things.
Now, look who's telling us what we got to do.
One of three things. Kill me, run me off, or take me in as a partner.
Partner? Why, we...
Now, let's consider the first. If you start killing people, just how far are you prepared to go with it? Another guy may come along tomorrow.
Not much we'd stop at, mister, to protect our interests.
I only say that killing me isn't the answer. As for choice number two, you run me off and I might very well inform on you. 25% of your gold is the reward I'd get.
It's a pretty strong argument in favor of killing you.
Yeah, I don't deny it. But take me in as a partner and you don't lose anything. I'm not asking for a share of what you've made so far, only in the profits to come. Think it over. I'll be looking after my borrowed.
Well, Howard?
Yeah. Send them away is out of the question.
Fred C. Dobbs ain't a guy who likes being taken advantage of. We got no real choice at all. Bump them off.
What do we gain by killing them? I don't mind being taken some advantage of as long as there ain't no money out of my pocket.
And whoever else happens along, they're to be invited in too, come one, come all, huh?
You got a point there, Dobbsy. No question about that. But to kill a man.
What's the matter? Ain't you up to it?
Sure, I'm up to it. Let the majority decide. What do you say, Curtin? For or against?
Well, for or against?
For.
Okay. We'll make it short and sweet for him. Stand right where you are, Cody.
Guns, huh? Gonna shoot me, huh?
Yeah. You convinced us.
Before you start shooting, you better take a look down there in the valley. There's some men coming on horses.
Oh, so that's your stinking game. I knew you was an informer. I knew it all the time.
You're wrong, brother. This means all our funerals.
Yeah. They're bandits, gentlemen. About a dozen of them.
Someone at the village must have told them about the American hunter up here.
Well, we better start thinking of a way to defend ourselves. We could try hiding the rocks, but then we'd lose the birds and the whole outfit. No, the best thing for us to make a fight of it.
Is it you three against them or us four?
Well, now I guess it's us four.
Yeah. We'll settle your case later.
If you're alive.
He's got something there, Dobbsy. That's right. If we're alive. Bandits turn out to be Gold Hat and his boys. Same crowd that held the train on the way up to Perla. They spotted us, all right. Started pouring it on us. And all at once, they turned and took off. Didn't make sense. And when we saw why, far down the mountain, hot on their trail, was maybe 50 soldiers, federales. We just stood there watching them shoot it out, half a mile below us.
Look at them federales. Sick them tight, chew them up and swallow them. Oh, boy, am I happy. Ought to tell you the truth, I was already eating dirt.
You better stay covered, Dobbsy. If them soldiers start spreading out, we may have company after all.
Yeah. Get down, Curtin.
Come here, you guys. Looks like the bandits settled our problem. Cody's dead.
What do you mean he's dead?
Take a look.
Bullet. Right through his neck.
Yeah, wonder who he was. Maybe better go through his pockets. Maybe he's got folks somewhere.
Here's his wallet, Pop. James Cody, Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, and a picture. A girl, a little kid. Guess she's his wife, huh?
Oh, it's not bad. Well, I guess we better dig a hole for him. Funny how it's all worked out. We didn't have to shoot him after all.
Gentlemen, if you'd ask me, I'd say it's about time we considered leaving this mountain.
How much gold do you figure we got?
Upwards of $35,000 apiece, and I'll tell you what, we ought to be plenty thankful.
Well, let's call it quits then, the sooner the better.
Take another week to put the mountain back in shape.
Do what to the mountain?
We've wounded this mountain. It's our duty to close her wounds. The least we can do for all the wealth she's given us. If you guys don't want to help me, then I'll do it alone.
You talk about a mountain like it was a real woman.
You've been a lot better to me than any woman I ever knew. Keep your shirt on, old-timer. Sure, I'll help you.
Six days later, we loaded the gold on the burrs in little canvas bags and started down. Late that afternoon, pushing through the brush, we walked straight into a bunch of Indians. I don't know where they come. Peaceful, all right, friendly. But they wanted help.
What do you mean, help? What kind of help?
They've been heading for Durango. Seems like a little boy in their village fell into the river. They fished him out, but he won't come too. He ain't dead, but they say he just won't come too.
Oh, that's tough.
Well, they want me to go back to the village with them. Ain't far. Maybe I can do something.
Why?
Was I to refuse them? They'd make me go. I'll be back soon, before morning, probably.
And if you're not?
I'm leaving my burrs with you. Look after my goods till I get back.
It's okay, Pop. We'll wait for you here.
No use arguing. Sorry, gentlemen. I gotta go back again to the village.
Yeah, but you just said you fixed the kid. You said he was cured.
Yeah, fixing the kid was simple. Artificial respiration, a few Boy Scout tricks. But they say I gotta visit them with... Well, I gotta go with them. Their gods will be angry if they don't show their gratitude to me.
Tell them to forget it. They don't owe us a thing.
I tried. Just made them mad. Well, that's them over there waiting for me.
I'll handle this. Avi hombre, no puta cadar. No, no.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Don't you touch your gun. Don't touch your gun or we'll be scalped in half an hour.
El señor no importa. El doctor, si importa.
Now, what's he saying now?
Well, he says it makes no difference about you guys, but I've got to go back with him.
Oh. Oh, it's like that, huh?
Yeah.
They just want you.
Looks like it.
Well, go on then. We'll meet in Durango.
Well, what about my goods?
Take them with you.
If they found out, they might forget he was their honored guest and bump them off, huh, Pop?
Well, what'll I do? Dump them out here on the ground?
We'll take them with us if you want us to.
Well.
Any better ideas, Pop?
I reckon that's about the only solution.
I'll bet you remember this the next time you try to do a good deed.
Don't worry, Pop. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be lonesome without you, Pop. Look out for those Indian dames. One of them squaws might marry you.
Yeah, maybe I'll do just that. Pick me out a good-looking squaw and marry her. They're easy to dress and feed and entertain. Well, so long, partners. See you in Durango. And so I left them and went back to the Indians. No choice. I had to go. Behind me, in the keeping of Curtin and Dobbs, was my share of the treasure, $35,000. I knew they'd have a time of it. Just as hard going down them mountains as it was going up.
I'm stopping here for tonight. You hear me, Curtin? I'm stopping here.
It's early yet. We can wake 4 or 5 miles before dark.
Well, go on then. Take his bros with you. That ain't my responsibility.
Since when?
Give us nothing but trouble for 2 days. Straying off trails, smashing their packs against the rocks. You know what he was doing when he turned them over to us. Mighty cute of him, wasn't it?
So you're staying here for the night, huh?
Yeah, you heard me.
Well, if you can't go any further.
Well, who says I can't? They don't make me laugh. I go 4 times as far as a mug like you, but I don't want to. I could if I want to. I want to, but I don't want to. See, mug?
What's the use of hollering, Dobbsy? Okay, we'll camp here.
far do you suppose the railroad is from here?
Well, it's hard to say. We'll reach the high pass in 2 days more and get fresh water. After that, I don't know. What's a joke, Dobbsy?
I was just thinking what a bonehead play that old jackass made when he put all his goods in our keeping. Figured he'd let us do his sweating for him, did he? Well, we'll show him.
Show him what?
Can't you see it's all ours now? We don't go back to Durango at all. Nowhere near Durango.
Steal his goods?
Ah, where'd you ever grow up? Sure. Take his goods and go north. Leave the old jackass flat.
Now, look, you don't really mean that.
Fred C. Dobbs don't say nothing he don't mean.
As long as I can do anything about it, you won't take a single grain of the old man's goods.
Ah. So you want to take it all for yourself and cut me out?
Well, you're out of your head. I'm on the level with the old man, same as I'd be with you.
Oh, sure. For a long time, I've had my suspicions about you, and now I know I've been right.
What suspicions?
Bump me off. Bury me out here in the brush like a dog.
Oh, you're crazy, Dobbs. You're out...
And you'd have not only the old man's good, but mine in the bargain. You'd have yourself a big laugh, wouldn't you? Thinking how dumb the old man and I were. Put your hands up, Curtin. Go on, put your hands up.
Dobbs.
Was I right or was I right? Go on, stand up. Get on your feet and take it like a man. Trying to put one over on Fred C. Dobbs.
Pull a gun on me, huh? Pull a gun on me. Only now I got the gun and you listen to me.
Go on. Pull the trigger.
Oh, Dobbsy, look, you're all wrong. I never intended to rob you.
You really mean that? Then give me back my gun.
Look, wouldn't it be better the way things are to split up? I mean now, tonight.
Yeah. And that would suit you fine, wouldn't it? So you could fall on me but from behind. Shoot me in the back.
All right, then. I'll go first.
And wait for me on the trail. Ambush me.
If I meant to kill you, why wouldn't I do it here?
Because you're yellow. You're yellow. You haven't got the nerve to pull the trigger when I'm looking you straight in the eye.
You really believe that, don't you?
Jokes. Full of jokes.
Well, then we won't separate. We'll go on together. And every day you'll take the trail right ahead of me, and every night I'll tie you up.
I'll tell you what, Kurt. I'll make you a little bet. 3 times 35 is 105. I'll bet you $105,000 you go to sleep before I do. How long can you go without sleeping, Curtin? 2 days? 3? 4? Whatever it is, I can go longer, see? And the day you fall down on the trail, that's the day that Fred C. Dobbs wins his bet. $105,000. Just like I said, Curtin, you couldn't take it, could you? Fell asleep, didn't you? Who wins the bet? Ha ha! Who wins the bet?
The old man will catch up with you. He will.
Oh, he will, Willie. Well, I got an answer for that one, too. I'll tell him you tied me to a tree. That you stole all the goods, yours, mine, and his. So he'll be looking for you, Curtin, not for me. And a fat chance he's got of finding you. So long, partner.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Act 3 of The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, I'd like to introduce the most promising young player, blue-eyed Claudia Barrett. Do you find it all work and no play on the Warner Brothers lot, Claudia?
No, indeed, Mr. Keeley. In fact, watching a Technicolor picture like My Dream Is Yours being made is entertainment in itself. I've been humming the songs ever since.
And fine entertainment it is. You know, Jack Carson is a radio talent huckster, and Doris Day as a singer are delightful.
It's especially good fun when Lee Bowman gives Jack some real competition for Doris's affection.
You know, so many places of local interest are featured, Los Angeles people should feel right at home.
And the clothes in My Dream Is Yours. They're really dreamy. Doris wears some pink crepe pajamas with a matching quilted robe. They're out of this world.
You mean they're not for a workaday world?
No, that's what surprised me. The designer told me that the crepe they were made of is definitely washable. Oh, with Lux Flakes, that is.
I'm glad you added Lux Flakes, Claudia, because wrong washing methods could easily spoil the delicate color.
I know that, Mr. Kennedy. I play safe and stick to Lux Flakes for my nice things.
Good girl. Well, you know, scientific tests prove that slips and nighties washed with Lux Flakes stay color fresh three times as long. These tiny diamonds are really amazing. They burst into suds the instant water touches them. Thick, active suds that leave undies sweet and fresh in no time. Yet they leave colors lovely.
I guess they were gentle because they're so wonderful on my hands.
You can believe your hands, Claudia. Mild Lux Flakes are safe for anything safe in water. They're another fine product of Lieber Brothers Company. Thank you for coming tonight, Claudia Merritt. We return you to William Keeley.
The curtain rises on the third act of The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, starring Humphrey Bogart as Dobbs and Walter Houston as Howard.
Yeah, I left Dobbs and Curtin on the trail with all my goods and gone to the village of the Indians. And they couldn't do enough for me. Food, drink, for little girls to brush flies off me. Yes, sir, old man Howard is a regular mogul. Real potentate. Then some of their hunters came in from the brush. They were carrying a man. Curtin it was. Curtin, with two bullet holes in him.
Dobbs did it, Howard. Dobbs.
Yeah, and made off with our goods, huh?
How could he be such a bad shot? He left me there. He thought I was dead.
Now, take it easy, son. Take it easy. You're talking too much.
Don't worry about me. I'll pull out of this if only to get that guy.
Well, I reckon I can't blame Dobbs too much.
What do you mean?
Well, Dobbs ain't a real killer as killers go. I think he's honest the next fella, almost. Big mistake was leaving you two fellas alone in the wilderness. Mighty big temptation, partner, believe me.
Dobbs shot me down in cold blood. He shot me a second time just to make sure.
A man goes crazy with that much wealth in his reach. Maybe if I'd have been young, been out there with either one of you, I might have been tempted too. Well, Curtin, nothing to do but set out after him.
A couple of days, I'll be okay.
Yeah, but not for chasing down a mountainside.
The Indians, they could loan us horses.
That's why I figure I'd catch Dobbs. He'd go as far and as fast as a man can, but alone, with them birds and on foot.
I'm going with you.
Give me 10 days, 2 weeks, and I'll come back for you.
I'm going with you.
Look at you, you're weak as a newborn kitten. Don't worry, I'll look after our interests.
I'm still going.
Yeah, I reckon you're going. Some of the Indians came with me. Said they had to protect me. I tried to figure out what I'd do with Iron Dobbs' boots. I'd try to make time. I'd sacrifice anything for time. Sleep, rations, even water.
Otro burrito muerto, señor. El tercer con la marca de la letra.
Howard, what have they found?
Another dead burro. Dobbs is really driving. That's the third burro he's killed off.
I don't like this wind. Dust blowing like this cover up his trail.
Yeah, it might blow like this for days. Fills a man's lungs with dust. Burns him out like pure poison.
We're not going to stop, are we? Dobbs won't stop.
We'll keep going. He'd be running out of water soon.
We were going to fill up at the high pass.
Yeah. When he went north, my friends say there's water's mighty scarce in the north. They say something else, too, Curtin.
Yeah?
Yeah. Gold Hat and a couple of his pals escaped the Federales. They're on foot. They passed here just a day before Dobbs.
There he is, amigo, see? At the mud hole. One man and six burros trying to squeeze water out of the mud hole.
Aye, six burros.
Shoes he wears, see? Shoes.
I see the three of us have a little fun, huh? Jewelry too, maybe, huh? Come on, we say hello to our friend.
Water. Water. I made it. I made it. Town can be far off now. A road. That's a road over there. Just one more day and...
Wait, amigo.
What? What do you want?
Señor, we are three poor men in rags. Cigarettes? You have cigarettes, maybe?
No, I haven't.
I got a little tobacco, so that'll do.
He's got a little tobacco.
No paper to roll it in?
Paper. Yeah, here.
Going into Perla, amigo?
Yeah, I gotta sell my burros. I gotta get some money.
Matches or cigarette?
Match, yeah. Here.
Your hand shakes, amigo. You sick, maybe?
Sick? No, I ran out of water. I'm all right now. I could use a good burro driver, maybe two or three.
Burro drivers,
Yeah. I'll pay when we get to town. I'm a hunter. See all those hides?
Hey, did I know you from someplace? Maybe I know you, huh?
No, I don't think so.
You are all alone, a poor, lonely man?
No, I'm not alone. I got a couple of friends coming along. They ought to be here any minute.
Let me look at your face. Sure, I know I've seen you before. Up in the mountains, the guy in the rocks before the Federales chase
us. Crazy, I never seen you till now.
You don't remember me? Me with the yellow sombrero, the gold hat? But then you tell a lie.
No,
you have a lot of hides on the burros, huh?
Yeah, like I said, I'm a hunter.
Ought to bring lots of money, huh? All these hides.
Hey, get away from them. Get away from them hides.
Well, we can sell these burros, too.
Hey, watch these. A little cloth bags filled with something. Hey, give me a knife. I think I look in the little bag.
You touch those bags and I'll kill you.
Hey, some kind of joke. Nothing in this bag, only sand, dirt. All the little bags got only sand.
Get out of here. Clear out before
a pistol, huh? Well, you can't even frighten a sick louse with that. You can only shoot one of us before the other two jump on you. And that one wouldn't mind too much because the Federales are after him anyway.
Stand back there.
Hey, with the rock. I hit him with the rock.
His shoes. I'm going to get his shoes.
Finish him off. Come on, finish him.
How you feeling, Curtin?
I'm all right.
Town is over the hill there, Perla. We're almost there.
But will Dobbs be there?
Yes, sir. That's the question, all right.
Shooting?
Yeah. Kind of like a volley. Sound seemed to come from the town.
Miranda, senor. He does los federales y los bandidos.
Si, federales. Execution, probably. Well, we'll know about it pretty soon now. Like we guessed it, all right, Curtin. Execution. Three bandits. Storekeeper here says that one of them was Gold Hat. They finally got him.
Yes, eso no es todo, señor.
He says that's not all.
Look, we better keep after Dobbs.
Yo tengo malas noticias, señor. Su compañero.
Bueno, amigo.
Su compañero fue matado a sangre fría por los tres banditos.
He's dead, Curtin. Dobbs is dead.
Dead?
Yeah, those bandits.
But our goods. What does he say about our goods?
¿Dónde están nuestras cosas?
Aquí, señor. Yo tengo todo aquí, incluyendo los burritos. Están detrás de la tienda.
He says he's got everything. This way, Curtin, the back of the store.
It's not here, Howard. The gold's gone. Everything else is here but the gold.
Keep your shirt on. Señor.
¿Qué pasa, señor?
¿Sabe algo sobre unas costelitas muy pesadas?
No, señor, no. De eso no son nada.
Well?
Says everything the bandits had is right here.
Señor? You asked my father about some little Thomas bags?
Yeah. Where are they?
Costalitos, ma de qué habla, hijo?
Un momento, papa. I do not know where the bags are, señor. But I heard the bandits talking in the jail. They said the señor whom they killed had Thomas bags with sand in them. Many, many bags on the burros.
Well, where are they? Where did they kill the American?
At the water hole by the ruin wall, outside the town.
Can you take us there?
Oh, yes, señor. Right away.
Another one, Howard. Empty. The bags are all empty. They're cut open and empty.
Keep looking.
Yeah, they're all... Yeah, they're empty, all right. Another couple of hours in this wind and we wouldn't even find the bags. Swept away and buried under the dust of the earth.
But what happened?
Bandits. Them miserable, stupid, ignorant bandits. Stole Dobbs' shoes, took the shirt off his back and threw away $105,000 worth of gold because they thought it was sand.
But then it must be here on the ground somewhere.
Here. Here. Here in this wind. Ha! Ha 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 ha! Ah, it's a great joke, Curtin, old boy. It's a great joke. Played on us by the Lord or fate or nature, whatever you prefer. But whoever or whatever played it certainly had a sense of humor. The gold is gone, Curtin. Gone back the way we found it.
Gone. It's all gone. Dobbs is dead and the gold is gone.
This joke is worth 10 months of suffering and labor, this joke is.
Look at the Indians. They're laughing too, and they don't know what they're laughing at.
That's our own private joke, Curtin, old boy.
Well, Howard, what next, I wonder?
As far as I'm concerned, I'm all fixed. I'll go back with the Indians, be a medicine man. 3 meals a day, 5 if I want them, roof over my head and a drink every now and then to warm me up. I'll be worshipped and fed and treated like a high priest for telling people things they want to hear. Good medicine men are born, not made. Come and see me sometime, my boy. You'll take your head off when you see how respected I am. Yeah, I'm all fixed up for the rest of my natural life. How about yourself? What are you aiming to do?
I haven't got any idea.
You're young yet. Got plenty of time to make 3 or 4 fortunes for yourself.
You know, I'm really no worse off than I was back in Tampico. I'm out a couple of $100 when you come right down to it. Not very much compared to what Dobbsy lost.
Any special place you're bent on going?
No. All places are the same to me.
Tell you what. You keep my share of what the Burrs and the Hydes will bring, and if you use the money to buy a ticket to Dallas, see Cody's widow. Better in writing. Tell her what happened.
Okay, Pop. I'll go to Dallas.
Hey, you son. Come here.
Yes, senor?
Tell your father to give this man all the hides and birds. They're all his now. I'm going off with the Indians.
Yes, senor. I will tell him.
Well, I guess I'll round up my heathen brethren and we'll be on our way. Bye, Curtin.
Bye, Howard.
Good luck.
Same to you.
Our stars will return for their curtain calls in a moment. Here's Mr. Keeley with our stars.
For drama that rates the applause of this audience, our thanks go to this evening's stars. And here they are, Humphrey Bogart and Walter Huston.
Thank you, Bill. You know, there's not much glamour available for this curtain call.
Don't look at me, Bogey. That's your department.
All the glamour in my family is home looking after the baby, Walter.
Well, we'll settle for a man that's just won an Academy Award. Walter, it must have been a double thrill to win your Oscar the same night your son John won his for direction and the screenplay of the same picture.
Yes, I was very proud of that moment, Bill. You see, a long time ago, I told my son that if he ever became a director, to please find a good part for his old man.
I want to speak the same lines to my son, Stephen, tonight. In another 30 years, maybe he'll do the same for me.
Well, you know, to help things along, we've got a supply of Lux Flakes over there in the wings. You can take it home to him.
Thanks very much, Bill. He's the boy that can use it.
Hey, Bill, what are you producing next week?
Well, it's a musical hit with a thrilling story. The 20th Century Fox picture, When My Baby Smiles at Me. And the stars, well, who else could they be but Betty Grable and Dan Daly? That's all anybody needs to know, that next week we'll have the wonderful team of Betty Grable and Dan Daly.
Hey, that sounds like standing room only. Well, good night, Bill.
Good night.
Good night. And that applause says it all. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening when the Lux Radio Theater presents Betty Grable and Dan Daly in When My Baby Smiles at Me. This is William Keeley saying goodnight to you from Hollywood.
Humphrey Bogart is currently starring in his own Santana production, Knock on Any Door. Heard in tonight's cast were Frank Lovejoy as Curtin, Gerald Moore as Cody, Don Diamond as Gold Hat, and Bill Johnstone, Jimmy Ogg, Jack Petruzzi, Charles Latour, Jack Crucian, Jay Novello, Eddie Marr, and Johnny McGovern. Our play was adapted by S.H. Barnett, and our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This is your announcer, John Milton Kennedy, reminding you to join us again next Monday night to hear When My Baby Smiles at Me, starring Betty Grable and Dan Daly. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Regardless of my circumstance, don't keep on giving.
And that's pretty much going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault Extravaganza. From April 18, 1948, that was the Lux Radio Theater, the treasure of Sierra Madre, with Humphrey Bogart and Walter Houston. We're going to make way for This Just In, coming up in just a moment at the top of the hour. And don't forget, for more classic stuff, you can catch that on Sunday night for Sunday Night Mysteries, 9 o'clock p.m. until 12 midnight. And if you like the lighter stuff, the lighter dramas, the comedies, the variety shows, you're in the spot where we bring you those to your radio or your listening device. That's Radio Vault every Tuesday between 10 and 1 o'clock on the station that's making the waves, WHFR 89.3. Have yourself a warm, warm Tuesday, and we'll talk to you once again in the near future. Thanks, y'all. Stay warm. Mm-hmm.
listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
The following pre-recorded hour is a WHFR Dearborn new music presentation.
Listening to the only station making waves. This is WHFR.FM 89.3 on your FM dial or on the web at www.WHFR.FM. I am Mr. Anderson, and this is This Just In, WHFR's new music spotlight show, where we do exactly that every week. You know, unless somebody's not here, but then since it's a pre-recorded show, we just put on another one. So, like, yeah. So it still fits. Anyway, welcome. We're going to start the show off, like I love to start it off, with something a little loud. We're going to hear from Brunhilde and their song, Souls Unchained.